What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. We have a Sunday recap coming up. Excited to break down all of week four with you. Looking forward to chatting with the super friends, John Breach, Ryan Wilson, Sean Wagner McGuff here. Debo producing as he does every day. We have eight shows a week, and sometimes 9 or 10. That means that, like, on average, Debo has to listen to me talk for like 10 hours a week. That is horrible. So please give Debo some love. Chat him out on the iTunes mentions. You can leave your favorite Debo moment or your favorite Super Friends moment or your favorite podcast moment, whatever it is. If you like it, love it, hate it, whatever. Leave a review, leave a 5-star rating. We're getting a bunch of those. The boss is noticing. They appreciate it. We've been getting shouted out in the company-wide newsletter. So do your thing. Leave reviews. Leave ratings. Hook a brother up. Let's hook you up with some NFL analysis. Diving into week 14, a wild week 14 that I don't know if there's like a ton of crazy finishes, but there's a lot of impactful playoff games, Ryan Wilson, including the Chiefs winning 23-16 over the New England Patriots in Foxborough on Sunday afternoon. Jim Nantz, Tony Romo on the call. The Chiefs covered the +3. The under 49 hit. Patrick Mahomes had 15 points. He was the top fantasy performer. What concerns you more, Ryan? The fact that the referees, including Jerome Boger, the head guy here, are all idiots, or the fact that the Patriots offense couldn't get going for roughly a half against a bad Chiefs defense?
Well, the Chiefs defense isn't bad. They're getting better. So I think that's noteworthy. And yes, they screwed the Patriots out of a touchdown. But here's the thing about that. I can't recall a time in Tom Brady's 20 plus years in the league where the Patriots have been routinely screwed out of calls. This feels like one of the first ones that I can remember. And so I wasn't irate and getting fired up on Twitter and yelling and screaming. I usually don't get fired up on Twitter and yell and scream, but I'm not yelling and screaming about the officials right now about these calls, even though they were blatantly, obviously wrong. And the Patriots in the end were screwed. And I don't know if they were screwed out of a win, but they were certainly screwed out of a chance to score more points. And one of those points being six by way of N'Keal Harry, who hasn't really shown up this year, partly because he's hurt, partly because he hasn't played well. So that's an issue. It's an issue that hasn't changed, and we can talk about this later. One thing that has changed suddenly is that they're calling pass interference, which week 14, here we are, they're doing it now around the league. But in terms of this game, the same thing we've always seen this season with the Patriots offense. It's not very good because they don't have anyone to throw the ball to. Guys are dropping passes. The offensive line struggled. Isaiah Wynn played a little better this week than he did last, and I'm sure he'll play better next week. But there's still fundamental issues about this offense that isn't working. I think the bigger story for me is that the Chiefs are able to move the ball on the Patriots' defense. Patriots' defense doesn't suck, and they weren't exposed necessarily, but I think it just goes to show that good offense beats good defense, and I don't even know if the Chiefs' offense was quote-unquote good. We know that Patrick Mahomes hurt his hand. He played through it. It looked like he hurt it early in the first quarter, and I thought, oh, well, that's it. That's a wrap. They're going to lose this game. Stayed out there, made a lot of tough throws. The defense for the Chiefs played well, intercepted Tom Brady, broke up the pass in the end zone. Breland did both of those things to end the game. And it's a huge win. And we talk about the Ravens not being afraid to go into New England and play the Patriots. Andy Reid don't care either. He'll play Bill Belichick anywhere, and he'll show up with his Hawaiian shirt and his menu and a couple play calls, and he'll be good to go. So, yeah, big win for them. I picked the Chiefs to win this game. I think I won one game this week because I was trying to make up some ground on Breach. Blew up in my face except for this win, unless Breach wants to count this one for like 10 wins.
Sorry, yeah, Wilson. My takeaway from this game.
See, Sean, here's the issue. When Ryan references Breach, that would indicate that you would allow John.
Does anyone care about their picks? I mean, go for it.
But when he says Breach, like, it's a clear segue to let Breach start talking. And you have to dive in, be selfish.
Here's the thing. I actually paused for a while, though. I was given a, and then there was a long pause. So I was like, okay, I'll go for it.
And I said, sorry, Ryan, but Sean, for several months, you have texted me and you ask what I wear and you want to emulate my life. So I get answering to Ryan's Breach call. can we rewind and talk about the fact the Chiefs almost had to forfeit this game because their equipment truck got lost on the way to Foxborough? I mean, that's the most insane thing that's ever happened in a football game.
You know who's
game.
Driving the truck, Breach? Jerome Boger.
It's believable. But if anybody missed that part of the story, the Chiefs plane flew into Boston. They were going to unload it, take their stuff to Gillette Stadium, but there were high school state title games being played there on Friday and Saturday, so the Chiefs couldn't leave their equipment there, so they left it on the plane. But then the plane left Boston, and went to Newark. And so on Sunday, there was 35 Chiefs players who didn't have any helmets or shoulder pads because the equipment was on this airplane in Newark, New Jersey. And if the equipment didn't get back to Foxborough by kickoff, the Chiefs would have had to forfeit. Okay. You know who should have forfeited? The officiating crew. I know Ryan lightly touched on what happened here. And I do realize that if Belichick calls up NFL office tomorrow morning, they're going to laugh in his face and be like, do you know how many calls the Patriots have gotten over the past 10 years? You've gotten every single one of them. This is the first time you guys have ever had these kind of calls go against you. But you look what happened when the Chiefs had that fumble in the fourth quarter. They blew it dead. They blew it dead. They didn't even call it a fumble on the field. The Patriots made a clear recovery, probably would have walked in for a touchdown. But instead they said that Travis Kelce was down, so they review it.
Breach, just to clarify, worth noting. So leading up to that, there was a situation where Bill Belichick challenged the spot of a third down play or a fourth down play, a third down. He believed he'd gotten the first down. He didn't get it. The challenge, he lost the challenge. Then the Kelce thing, what happened was they ruled that his forward progress had been stopped, which was even.
The relay was down because you can't challenge forward progress.
Okay.
I was just clarifying.
Continue on.
So they ruled that he was down, which is why it was silly, because that you would think it was forward progress because he wasn't anywhere near the ground. His knee was a foot away from the ground. I don't know how anyone could have ever ruled that he was down, and I think anyone watching the game thought that they had ruled his forward progress. So now Belichick uses his second challenge, and Brent, I'm glad you brought it up because the challenges do come into play here. So Belichick has to use his second challenge to win to get the ball back. And since he lost the first challenge that Brinson just mentioned when he was challenging a spot, the Patriots are now out of challenges with the football. So later on this drive, and this is the Enkiel Harry play that Ryan was talking about, Harry catches what should have been a touchdown pass. The ref said he stepped out of bounds at the 3-yard line when replay clearly showed he was a good 6 inches inbounds. So the Patriots should have got a touchdown here. Belichick couldn't challenge it, though, because he was out of challenges. And so now what happens? The Patriots probably should have scored a touchdown because they were down at the 3-yard line, but they didn't. They got held to a field goal, and that was absolutely the turning point because now the Patriots are out of challenges. They had two calls blow up in their face, and then there was a horrible non-pass interference call toward the end of the game that they couldn't challenge because they didn't have any challenges. So Belichick, the master, blew it with his challenges, guys. I don't think he should have challenged that play that Brinson was talking about with the spot that gave the Chiefs first down.
I know Sean wants to talk, so I'll very briefly. The Kelce thing, what if we can get to 20 minutes without Sean talking? It'd be awesome.
Listening to Brand New right now on these headphones, so I got
a Fish concert, the Fish Charleston Sunday Night Show, blaring in the background, so I don't really care. You can talk. It was ruled down by contact is what was the ruling on Kelce, which is weird because, like, I think what happened is they blew the whistle thinking his progress had been stopped or he was down or something like that. They made a mistake and blew the whistle.
It looked like he was down. Like, it looked like his elbow caused a fumble, like, live. So I was like, oh, that's what happened. I get that. They challenged it. And it was a fantastic play by, I think, Devin McCourty. He punched the ball out twice in midair.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Well, I mean, I didn't think live, I wasn't like, he's definitely down. I was like, live, I was like, that's going to be close. But these guys have to understand you can't blow the whistle on that because if you do that, and I understand, like, if you're 100% sure that he's down and that the ball should have been out, I get it. But, like, if it's a bang bang play, you got to kind of let it go, right? I mean, don't you think so? Because if you don't, then what happens is, I mean, it's a clear recovery. The Patriots probably would have scored there. And then, as Breach points out, the Enkiel Harry thing too. Jerome Boger was asked by pool reporter Mike Reese about this. Mike Reese of ESPN, and he said, "What led to that not being called a touchdown?" What led to it was the covering official in the wing was blocked out by defenders. The downfield official was on the goal line and looking back toward the field of play had that he stepped out of the 3-yard line. So they got together, conferred on that. The final ruling was that he was out of bounds at the 3-yard line. So in other words, the guy in charge of looking at it couldn't see it. So he threw it down the line to the guy who could see it best and asked, like, hey, should you just rule that a touchdown? Let it be a touchdown so it's automatically reviewed. They're like, not really. Those two officials who were covering it, they look at it in real time. The case is unique in that the guy who would have ruled touchdown had him short. So maybe if that ruling official on the goal line had a touchdown, we could have gotten into that. But he thought with that guy stepped out of bounds, the goal line wasn't in play. These people are a disaster. It is driving me insane. I mean, I get that officiating's hard. This is a difficult job, and there's a lot going on. You got to deal with player safety. You got to deal with game management. You got to deal with a bunch of officials. You got HD cameras all over the place. Tons of rules changes every which way. You can't figure it out. I understand it, but you can't let the outcome of games be affected by these referees, and it happens week in and week out. So, Ryan, I would ask – I'm just kidding. Sean, go ahead.
So I was going to say, look, I'm not excusing the officiating. The Patriots got screwed in this game. But to your point, Brinson, this does happen every single week, not to the Patriots, but at least one team, to the point where, like, it's happened so many times, I'm kind of numb to it, and I almost expect one team to get screwed over. And so for me, the larger issue is that the reason when they blow that play dead, as Stephon Gilmore has the ball, is running downfield, only Tyreek Hill is there, and Tyreek Hill can catch him, but he's probably not going to tackle him, you would think. He's a small guy. So the problem is that it felt like such a significant turning point because you just did not have faith that even though the Patriots were going to get the ball, that their offense would be able to piece together a drive that would end in the end zone. And then when they actually do score the touchdown, it's called back. This should not be as big of a deal because the Patriots have first and goal at the 3-yard line, and most good offenses should be able to score from first and three in the 3-yard line, and it should not matter. Like, my entire thought process was that the Patriots are going to get 7, and what's going to screw them is that they're going to lose a minute off the clock because they only had one timeout left at that point. But they couldn't even punch it into the end zone. And so that, to me, is the bigger takeaway from the game where, yes, they got screwed by the officiating, but teams all across the league every week get screwed by the officiating. And this Patriots offense just isn't good enough to overcome those kinds of mistakes. And I think even Bill Belichick knows. If you look at the next drive, the Chiefs go 3-and-out, and they punt the ball from their own 23-yard line with 10 minutes left in the game, and they're up by 7. And the Patriots didn't even stick a punt returner back there to return the punt. They went all out to block the punt because it felt like Belichick was saying, there's no way my offense is driving 70 yards down the field. We got to create some sort of turnover, something like that. And sure enough, they punt 57 yards because they don't block it, and the ball bounces 20 yards on the ground. So that, look, you can blame the officiating. It seems like it's not going to change. It's not worth analyzing because we know it's a problem. The bigger problem is this Patriots offense. And like what Ryan was saying, this Patriots team is good enough to win the Super Bowl. Like, their defense is good enough. But it seems weird to say that a team with Tom Brady, the most clutch quarterback of all time, who's known for his game-winning drives and fourth-quarter comebacks, it doesn't feel like they can come back on teams. The second they get down by a score or two scores, the game feels over. And if you look at
they had a play on fourth and goal to tie the game.
Right, but they didn't get it. And like,
they had a play like you're. I understand what you're saying, but I mean, Tony Romo had a great point too. He's like, listen, the Patriots just found something. Finally, they moved Julian Edelman out. They've been running Julian Edelman in the slot, and he was being double teamed by a safety for obvious reasons. So Tom Brady couldn't get easy completions. Well, when they started sliding him outside, it forced the safety to slide over, and it gave him some looks in the middle. Now, I don't think that they're magically going to have. Antonio Brown step in. Adam Schefter of ESPN, I believe, reported on Sunday that Brown was probably, it wasn't going to happen. However, I mean, you know, if you open up the middle of the field for Jacoby Myers, for N'Keal Harry, for Matt Lacoste, I mean, you've got more stuff to work with. So I don't know that I would rule the Patriots out entirely on their offense. I think they're sort of figuring it out.
Well, a couple things to back up Sean, because I feel like you're grasping at straws there, Brinson. Julian Edelman was targeted 12 times. Jacoby Myers was targeted 3 times, had 1 reception. I think he had at least 1 drop. And then also, the scoring play, hooky-dooky play for that first touchdown to Julian Edelman. Another big play, which was who threw that pass on that long run in the fourth quarter?
James White, I think.
Yeah, James White threw the pass. So that's the offense. I mean, you can move Julian Edelman wherever you want to move him, but if that's the offense, that's how you're generating plays. And Tony Romo kept talking about that too. Oh, they're best at trick plays than anyone in the league. When they need to, they call it, they dial it up at the right time. Well, they should have dialed up about 2 more of them because, yes, they got screwed, as Sean mentioned and we all mentioned. And, yes, they were at the 3-yard line. They should have been able to score from the 3-yard line, as Sean just mentioned. So if you're going to rely on hooky-dooky plays for the rest of the season as a big staple of your offense, you're not going very far. I mean, this team resembles nothing like last year's team that I think went 11-5, right? And then,
what do you mean it doesn't resemble last year's team?
Last year's team had an offense. They had Rob Gronkowski.
Was their offense that good last year? I don't think it was.
It's better than this.
Their offense was
It's better.
You at least had faith that in a crucial situation, like if you go back to the Chiefs game last year, you can go back to either of their matchups, but if you look at the playoff game, they were able to score on that.
We're not getting into the playoffs. I mean, the playoffs are coming up. Let's see what they look like in the playoffs. The Patriots, people were right. People thought the Chargers were going to come into New England and bury the Patriots last year.
One person thought that.
A lot of people were picking the Chargers to win.
Brenton and his doll thought that.
Lot of people were picking the Chiefs to take care of
business. Littlefield thought that too.
Look, the Patriots went. The Patriots got the run game going. They've shown an ability to run. That was the weird thing. Like, they keep getting away from the run against Houston. I mean, their opening drive was a march down the field for a touchdown.
How they score that touchdown?
What's that?
I mean,
score that touchdown?
But the so-called march included two penalties, I think, on third down with pass interference.
Well, but I mean, like, it was a pass interference call because they were going to be catches. Like, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like if a guy's, like groped by a defender and he can't make a catch, I mean, that's sort of a – it's not like they were, like, fluky penalties.
By the way, we crush teams for playing crappy schedules, like the Bills, for example. Who has the Patriots beaten? They beat the Steelers in week one. And that's Gus Hodges.
That's the bigger takeaway for me is that
the Bills.
No, the Chiefs, I mean, the Chiefs, Texans, and Ravens, who are the other three top seeds in the AFC, the Patriots have played them all and they lost to them all. And they lost to them all in different ways. Like the Chiefs, you know, that would be my concern. With the Chiefs, by the way, Sean, do you think that the Chiefs will catch the Patriots in the standings?
I think they have a very – so if you look at the Chiefs' chances, it pretty much comes down to – obviously, they have to win out, and I think that they will. They have the Broncos, Bears, and Chargers with only the Bears game on the road, and I would imagine, unless the Ryan Wilson conspiracy theory comes into play and Andy Reid lets Matt Nagy win the game, I would imagine they would go unbeaten the rest of the way. If you look at the Patriots' schedule, it comes down to that Bills game. And if you trust the Bills to be able to go into Foxborough and do it. If it was in Buffalo, I could see it maybe happening. I don't know if I see it happening. I think it'll be a close game, though, because I don't know if this Patriots team, if they're not getting turnovers, and Josh Allen lately is playing well enough that he's avoiding turnovers for the most part. So, no, I don't think they will, because I don't think the Patriots have a loss on the schedule, but I think it's possible.
And, Sean, to mention, you said the Patriots, their schedule comes down that Bills game. The other two games on their schedule are the Bengals and the Dolphins. So those are two absolute locks. And you know what about this game is that the Patriots offense was so bad that it kind of overshadowed. The Chiefs offense wasn't great either. You look, Kansas City scored two touchdowns in this game. One of them came after an interception. One came after a blocked field goal. It's not like Kansas City put together any highly impressive scoring drives. Everything else ended in a field goal. And now that Patrick Mahomes has a banged up hand, I don't know that this team is a team that I could trust going into the playoffs if Patrick Mahomes is banged up at all, because he's what makes that offense go. And if the Patriots weren't so bad, we would have been just spent the past 10 minutes talking about how the Chiefs offense just wasn't that impressive in this game.
But John, the difference is that the Patriots offense is ranked first in the league, according to Football Outsiders. I mean, and they're at home. I think that knowing that, I'm willing to give Chiefs a little of a break, right?
Yeah, and I think Romo talked about this on the broadcast. The Patriots made a lot of really good halftime adjustments, because if you look outside of Mahomes's deep touchdown to Hardman, outside of that drive, which was, to Breach's point, that was like the only drive where they actually drove down the field, and it involved like a couple third down deep bombs by Mahomes. After that, everything the Chiefs were running were like crossing routes and short passes. And then if you look at what the Patriots did in the second half, is they were pretty much trying to force the Chiefs to beat them deep. And I just don't think the offensive line was able to hold up long enough. It, part of Mahomes' like so-called struggles the last couple weeks, it seems like he's not really comfortable. Like, he doesn't trust his offensive line back there, and he's bailing on some clean pockets. And there was one play in particular that they were trying to salt away the game. They had like a 3rd and 8, and they tried to run a crossing pattern to Tyreek Hill like 4 yards over the middle, and it completed it. But if you look at the coverage, the Patriots, instead of just trying to track him across the field, were just waiting for him on the other side of the field. So it looked like the Patriots did a really good job to account for those short crossing patterns, realizing that, look, we can't keep up with these guys, but let's just wait for them to come into our zones, and let's not play as much man, and maybe that'll work. And it did work.
It was amazing. Like, the first half, the Chiefs, I mean, like, not like Patrick Mahomes didn't play bad or anything, but like he wasn't having to throw into tight windows. I mean, those guys were wide open, whether it was Darwin Thompson or Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce or Spencer Ware, whoever it was. I mean, they were just wide open across the middle. They were averaging, I think, 6.4 yards per play at one point when they were up by multiple scores or whatever it was. And then they finished with 4.9 yards per play. They outplayed the Patriots. They beat the Patriots. Whatever. New England's gonna have to do New England stuff and come up with Belichick magic in the playoffs if they want to win. But, tough loss at home.
So is anyone worried about the Patriots? Other than me?
I mean, I think, Sean, I don't know what you kind of said, hey, it comes down to that Bills game, but you didn't answer whether or not you thought they were going to be caught in the standing by the Chiefs. And I do. I think the Patriots are going to fall to 3, and then that's going to create – imagine Tom Brady losing to Duck Hodges in the first round of the playoffs at home, at Foxborough, at Gillette Stadium, and Duck and the Steelers go in there and upset the Patriots, which doesn't seem impossible because a team like the Steelers have such a good defense that they could hold New England to 10, 7, or 17 points. So, I mean, the fact that we've seen the Patriots lose to the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Texans in the last few weeks makes me think that any of these top-tier teams, I mean, I think the Titans could beat them. I think the Bills could beat them. I think any of those teams could potentially beat the Patriots, which I never would have said last year or the year before because Belichick was such a better coach, and he still is, but he doesn't have any sort of talent advantage because the Patriots offense is so bad.
Yeah. By the way, if Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel come into New England as like a less than 7-point favorite in the playoffs and you pick them to beat Bill Belichick, you're going to have to do like a soliloquy on the pod explaining your idiot behavior when the Patriots hang 50 burger on Vrabel and they win that game by 60.
Deal.
Yes. I will buy you 50 burgers if the Patriots hang a 50 burger on the Titans. There's a 0% chance of that happening.
The only problem is that you're going to have to do a breach sale and heat them up in the microwave after they're sitting in your fridge.
That's the only way to eat them. And you know where the Patriots are doing right now, guys?
We're on to Cincinnati.
Well, look at Breach with the sound clips.
I mean, you could have definitely told me to get ready.
That was a Breach special. Cincinnati. Come on now.
Well done.
They are actually on to Cincinnati.
Yeah, we're on to Cincinnati. It's nothing about the past, nothing about the future. It's right now we're preparing for Cincinnati.
Okay, do you feel like the talent you have here is good?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
Real quick, to answer Breach's question, I think the Patriots still get the 2 seed, and I think they're going to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, I agree with
That's
you.
My take, yeah.
Okay. By the way, the Patriots had won 21 straight home games, including the postseason, their last loss at home, week 4 of the 2017 against the Panthers. They were 29-0 at home when facing quarterbacks younger than 25 years old coming into today. And this is the first time that the Patriots have lost at home with both Tom Brady and Julian Edelman to an AFC opponent. They are now 42-1 in those games. The Chiefs, by the way, congratulations, Chiefs, Kansas City. Turns out my Broncos prediction, not correct. The Chiefs did, in fact, clinch the AFC West on this day. The Broncos are the Broncos and the Raiders are not eliminated. The Chargers are eliminated. We'll get to them in a minute. Instead, 49ers, 48, Saints, 46. One of the wildest games of the year, maybe the best game of the year. The Saints, the 49ers cover the 1.5. They're plus 1.5. The over hit twice, once by each team. Whatever it was, 45. Drew Brees, 49 fantasy points. Ay, ay, ay. Did Jimmy Garoppolo prove anything to you, Ryan Wilson? And do you believe that the 49ers have now secured the number one overall seed and likely division title?
Yeah, Jimmy G proved a lot, and I think Kyle Shanahan proved a lot. The defense didn't prove a whole bunch. They proved that it's tough to go into New Orleans and play with a really good offense. And credit to the Saints, because my big question coming into this game was, could this offense sort of find itself? Because I had questions about Drew Brees coming back from the thumb injury. He hadn't been quite himself, and the offense had sort of sputtered. Well, he didn't sputter at all. The offense looked right on point, and the 49ers had no issues going into New Orleans, matching touchdown for touchdown to the very bitter end for the Saints. And when the Saints scored that touchdown with less than 2 minutes to go, I don't remember the exact time when they scored, 53 seconds they scored to make it 46-45. And Jimmy G, Kyle Shanahan, George Kittle very calmly drove down the field, and George Kittle dragged people grabbing on his face mask halfway down the field to set up that game-winning field goal. Great win, huge win for the 49ers, and I feel like these are the type of wins you look back on if you make a deep playoff run and say that was sort of the turning point, because we all had questions about Jimmy G. He's played up and down, and I was really impressed with what he did on Sunday and their biggest game of the season, and I feel like they are the best team in the NFC, especially now that the Seahawks have lost and they have resumed their right. I mean, there's no way this is the fifth number five team in the NFC. That was sort of bonkers, so I'm glad that worked out for them. Huge win. Very proud of Jimmy Garoppolo and his very handsome face.
Heading into after October, we were looking at the 49ers schedule and being like, we're going to learn a lot about this team because they had a lot of good matchups with playoff teams. This is what they did. They lost to the Seahawks in overtime in a game they probably should have won if they make that field goal in overtime, or it could have been a tie. So they were right there with them. Skipped the Cardinals game. They beat the Packers by 29 points. They went to Baltimore, lost on the last second field goal in terrible conditions, and then they went into New Orleans and beat them. Like, this team has – I know they didn't go undefeated in that stretch, but this team to me has proven everything that they needed to prove. Garoppolo has proved everything he needed to prove. That's not saying he's a top five quarterback or anything like that, but he is good enough to get to where the 49ers need him to go, clearly. It's funny because a lot of people, I felt like after the game, were talking about, like, what an incredible signature drive at Garoppolo. Like, I don't even think the last drive was that impressive. Like, it came down to a fourth and short, and he threw a quick out, and it was all George Kittle, tacked on with a 15-yard penalty that got them into field goal range. But everything he did in this game, and his interception was even a tip pass, was incredible. And I think he outplayed – this isn't a slight of Drew Brees, but he outplayed Drew Brees in the Superdome, which I don't think is anything we thought a month ago would have happened. So all credit to him. This team in my mind, and this team – these two teams in my mind are the two best teams, and I would love to see a rematch.
Yeah, ideally we get Saints 49ers and then 49ers Ravens or Saints Ravens or something like that. That would be cool. I'd be fine with that. By the way, of course, Emmanuel Sanders acquired at the trade deadline through a touchdown pass. Jimmy Garoppolo was asked about it.
I didn't actually get to see it. I was blocking. Yeah, so. I threw a shoulder in there. So. I'll see that film though. I was so happy. I turned around, he was laying on the ground. It was. Great timing. It was awesome.
He said blocking with air quotes because he wasn't blocking, because we all know that quarterbacks are cowards who don't block, except for Ryan Tannehill. We'll get to that in a minute. Jimmy G, Emmanuel Sanders was asked about Jimmy G and said, I know a lot of people are still looking at him to see what kind of player he is, but I'm telling you, he's a baller. When you've got somebody like Jimmy with the personality he has and the hard work he puts in the clutch moments, he's not going to fold. Who would you take, Breach? Jimmy Garoppolo or Joe Flacco?
That's a hard question. Are we talking about Joe Flacco from January 2013, that small window? Or are we talking about Jimmy Garoppolo literally at any other time at Taco Bell pulling tiny little shreds of cheese out of his beard? Because I would take that Jimmy at any point over Joe Flacco. This game, from the Saints' perspective, and Ryan and Sean were both mentioning how many questions they had about the 49ers. And Ryan mentioned, hey, the Saints, can they get their offense together? This is the game I needed to see from Drew Brees. He has been up and down all year, and it was like, can he play a good defense this year? Can he put up big numbers? Can he carry the Saints when they need him to? He's 40 years old. It looks like he's been struggling a little bit this season. And if the 49ers are going to put up a lot of points, are the Saints going to be able to hang with it? Because I thought the 49ers put so much pressure on it that Drew Brees would be like, look, I'm 40 years old. I don't want to take these hits. I give up. Tom Brady does it sometimes. He just falls to the ground and kind of takes that sack just so he doesn't take a hard hit. Drew Brees didn't do that. He threw five touchdown passes, threw for 349 yards, and he literally had a win. I really thought the reason the Saints lost this game is because they made an absolutely terrible call on 4th and 18 when they tried to run a fake punt, which made no sense. I understand that you want to surprise the other team, and I rarely would ever question a Sean Payton call because he's a brilliant coach, but a fake punt on 4th and 18 is literally the stupidest thing you can do, especially when you throw it up in the air on a play where the gunner is allowed to interfere with you. I know a lot of people on Twitter and people watching at home probably wondering why there was no interference when the 49ers guy pretty much accosted the Saints receiver, but you cannot be called for interference on a punt play if the team lines up in punt formation. So this was, your guy has no chance at catching the ball. The whole thing of a fake punt is to catch someone off guard, so maybe.
Hey, John, can I ask you quickly, though? Do you think Sean Payton knew that rule? Because he seemed like he didn't know that rule when he was whinging to the refs about it.
I mean, for someone who challenges every interference call and should know that, and he's on the competition committee, you feel like he would, but I'm not sure what he was talking to the refs about. I know they touched on it a little. I don't know that he knew the rule, though. And if he didn't, then I'm surprised he called this play without knowing the rule. Somebody in his headset didn't say, hey, Sean, maybe this is a bad idea because they can tear our receiver down because interference is legal. So anyway, they ran 4th and 18 from the 49ers 45-yard line. So San Francisco took over, good field position. At the time, the score was 35-33. 49ers scored on that next possession, went up 42-33. And that was really a huge kind of momentum swing in the game. If the 49ers, if they just punt the ball there and the 49ers take over at their own 5 or 10-yard line, who knows how this game plays out. But I just thought that was a horrible call that made a huge difference in the game.
12 combined touchdowns, 94 points, second most combined points in the game this year. Second game this season in which both teams scored 40 points. the highest scoring NFL game decided by 2 points or fewer since 1983, and the second most combined yards in a game this season. Quarterbacks, when they go 5 touchdown passes and 0 interceptions in the game, including playoffs, 98-6-1 coming into today. And the Saints made it 98-7-1 with that loss. Obviously tough there. Worth noting here too, from the playoff picture perspective, the Saints fell to the third spot here. Now, they're guaranteed no worse than the third spot, but they have a worse conference record than the Packers, who jumped to number 2. And did the Packers feel like the number 2 team in the conference? No, absolutely not. But the Saints are 4 games up on Dallas, who's 6-7, so they can't be caught for that third seed. So your 1 through 3 seeds are going to be, obviously, you know, we could have Seattle, could catch San Francisco, maybe. Doesn't look great for them. The Saints would have been over 20% to win the Super Bowl, according to sports science simulations and data, when they were about to win. And San Francisco would have fallen to 10%. But with San Francisco's win, they move up to 15%. Saints still at 17% because they had the division locked up and the 49ers might not get a bye, et cetera, et cetera. San Francisco went from a 44% chance to win the division to 58. And that was going into Sunday night. Then the 49ers jumped to 70%. We'll get to that game in just a second. The Seahawks dropped down to 4%. So pretty good chance that the 49ers win this division. What was the, was the Manny Sanders pass the craziest play that we saw in this game, Brian?
There's a lot of crazy plays. I mean, John mentioned the fake punt, which sort of was curious to say the least. But yeah, Manny Sanders was balling out. Debo Samuels was balling out. I mean, he might be the front runner. I'm trying to think for offensive rookie of the year, if we're not counting quarterbacks. And I'm trying to think.
Josh Jacobs.
He didn't play today, but yeah, that's obviously one too. But I think you expected Josh Jacobs to contribute just because he's a running back. But Debo Samuel, you never know with wide receivers when they come in. And I think he had a slow start to the season. He dropped a few passes, if I recall correctly. And he's been going off. I don't know if he's been Jimmy G's number one guy, but he's 1A after Manny Sanders. So that's been fun to watch. But, yeah, that touchdown by Manny Sanders. Let's see. He had a touchdown pass. I had a stat here. I can't find it. It was a fun fact.
That seems so fun now.
Yeah, right? So let me look for that, and you say something.
The other thing that, like, that really blew up in terms of viral talk and whatnot, the George Kittle smash factor at the end when he like refused to get out of bounds, just like fighting through like his helmet. I think it was PJ Williams or was it Lattimore? Who's
Marcus?
Marcus Williams, excuse me, he's grabbing his helmet and like pulling on his face mask. He's still ripping through it. And Kittle said after, run through people, but have a good time doing it. That's his motto on Yak. I like it. That's my motto for life, Breach. Run through people.
But you should get it tattooed on your forehead and then. That would be fun. The podcast would be more fun. One thing that shouldn't be overlooked is the Saints lost Jared Cook in the first quarter. He only played one quarter.
After he caught 2 touchdown passes.
He caught 2 passes for 64 yards. As the person just said, they were both touchdowns. He's been a huge part of their offense. And for them, he's been – because the Saints don't really have another target outside of Michael Thomas that they can really rely on. And so when Jared Cook started to become a factor, that's when Drew Brees started to look better over the past few weeks, and the Saints started to look better overall. And so to lose him, you know, hopefully that's not going to be an injury that keeps him out multiple weeks, because the Saints offense is much, much better when he's in there. Saints might have put up 70 points if Cook would have been stayed healthy.
By the way, fun fact, Emmanuel Sanders became just the third player in NFL history, non-quarterback, of course, to record a passing and receiving touchdown in multiple games since 1970, joining Walter Payton.
Odell Beckham. Is he one?
Fourth player, yes. Excuse me. Walter Payton, Danny Thomason, and Odell Beckham.
I only knew Odell. I didn't know the other two.
I have a funner fact, and I found it. I tried to steal my thunder. Not happening.
Yep.
Manny Sanders is the first player with 100-plus receiving yards, one receiving TD, and one pass TD since week 7, 2018. You know who did it then?
This is last year.
Manny Sanders.
Ah.
Okay, the twist. That was not looking fun for a while.
Look at this. This is called a double dunk on Sean Brenton for laughing.
Drew Brees became the fourth player in Super Bowl era with 5 passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown in a single game, along with Mark Malone, 85, Aaron Rodgers, 2019, week 7, and Mark Rippon. And, he now has 11 career games with at least 5 touchdown passes, the most in NFL history.
By the way, any coach that refuses to run a quarterback sneak should be fired on the spot. That touchdown, jump over the top of the pile by Drew Brees, he's done that plenty of times before. He does it better than anyone else. He's also 4'10", so you can do it with a quarterback who's more athletic and younger than Drew Brees. Tom Brady always goes for it, and 4th-and-1 always converts it. That shouldn't be an excuse to turn around and hand the ball off to a guy that's 5 yards behind you to see him get tackled 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
One other weird decision Sean Payton made was going for 2 after their second touchdown. Like, either be progressive or don't. Go for 2 all the time, or kick the extra point. There was literally no reason to go for 2. He just pulled it out of his butt and decided to go for 2 on the second touchdown, and they didn't get it. So, again, it was 13-7. So just 2 completely baffling special teams decisions really, really hurt the Saints. I still don't know why. And obviously that extra point, again, would have changed the complexion of the game. So, I don't know. Those 2 bonehead decisions cost the Saints.
Rams 28, Seahawks 12. The Rams cover. They were -1. The under 47.5 hits. Jared Goff, your top fantasy performer, just 19 points. A very slow moving game. Very disappointing game for the Seahawks. The Rams, as I think I called the podcast. I had the Seahawks on the pick'ems page, but I took the Rams on my picks league. So I don't know what happened there. That may have been a miscommunication. I'll be looking into that and filing a formal complaint with our bosses. The Rams looked awesome on offense, Sean. Again, Jared Goff was dealing, except for that one pick 6 and the other pick he had. But mostly he was like slinging it around. Like, they had great tempo. They were blocking well. Todd Gurley absolutely destroyed Trey Flowers' life going in for a touchdown run. They were busting out a bunch of trick plays. Wide receivers were running. It felt like they were like using motion more than they had really all season to generate issues for the Seahawks defense. And it's like, you know, where has that been all year long? Or is this just the Rams played another questionable defense and they can't play well against good defenses?
Yeah, this was utter domination on both sides of the ball. I mean, the Seahawks didn't score an offensive touchdown this game. It came on that pick 6 that you mentioned. And with 11 minutes left, the Rams were up 19. The Rams had 15 more first downs than the Seahawks and 245 more yards. So that was before garbage time. So this was a complete utter domination. It started with the Rams offense. And to your point, this looked like vintage last year Rams offense. You had Goff throwing off play action outside the pocket on crossing patterns to Robert Woods. Shout out to Robert Woods winning my fantasy matchup.
Did you beat our boss, Kevin Steinle?
I did. He was very pessimistic early in the day. Maybe if he had a little bit more belief in his team, they would have persevered. Unfortunately, no.
Hashtag, you hate to see it.
So the Rams offense comes out in the first half, and they look like last year's offense. And they kind of in the second half slowed down a little bit, but that was okay because the thing that was also so impressive by them is their defense completely shut down the guy going for MVP and Russell Wilson, who had a really good chance in primetime to at least keep his name next to Lamar Jackson as Lamar kind of runs away with it. And this Seahawks could not score. The Seahawks were doing their normal dumb thing where they're down multiple scores and still handing the ball off to Chris Carson up the middle. And so this is the Rams team we've been looking to see all season. But to your point, Brinson, the Seahawks, it's weird because the Seahawks are a good team, so you want to give the Rams credit for beating up on a good team. But the Seahawks, I don't know, from top to bottom talent-wise, are more that much more talented than the Rams. I would say they have just a much better quarterback, and that quarterback has led to them winning a lot of close games this year. So you would want to see the Rams do this against, I believe they have the 49ers still on their schedule. And the only problem for the Rams is that they're 8-5. But there's going to be one good team in the NFC that misses out in the playoffs just because there are seven really good teams. And it's looking like it's going to be them unless the Vikings or Packers slip down the stretch. And again, the Rams still have to play the 49ers. And I believe that game is in Santa Clara. So I don't know if they're playoff good. But yeah, this is definitely encouraging, especially for the long-term future if you're hoping that you got to resurrect Jared Goff because you're paying him all that money for the next few years.
I don't know how good it is for the long-term future. I mean, these are two big wins back-to-back. Yeah, they beat the Cardinals last week. It still counts. Yeah, they beat the Seahawks, who were sort of decimated this week. Rashad Penny, his season may be over, it sounds like, according to Pete Carroll, with a knee injury. Typically, that wouldn't be a big deal for an NFL team in 2019, but since Brian Schottenheimer only runs the ball, that's a sort of a problem. But the Rams still have issues with the offensive line. They still have no draft picks. We still don't know how good Jared Goff really is. He's had two good games, and that's great. They could make the playoffs, but as you point out, Sean, the Vikings have to lose two or three probably. They at the Chargers, then they're Green Bay and Chicago to end it. And then the Rams are at Dallas. I don't think any of us think that they're going to lose to the Cowboys, which is an indictment on Jason Garrett, at San Francisco and then Arizona. So it could be close, but I think this team has done too much damage to itself over the course of the season that their playoff hopes may be shot. My bigger concern is with the Seahawks, who look to be going to the playoffs unless – I don't know what would have to go wrong for them not to make the playoffs at this point. They have one player, Russell Wilson. The defense hasn't been great. Everyone on that team was dropping passes today. Russell Wilson should have just thrown the ball to himself. And there's no quick fix for this because at the end of the day, the coaching is, all right, let's run the ball and always punt the ball on fourth down. So you're not going to win games where other teams are sort of doing the – things that maximize their chances of success when you do the exact opposite and you have one player. So they needed to win. They didn't. The Rams won, so it's encouraging, but I don't know how encouraging. And now that's all that's really left is for the Rams to try to figure out a way to go to the playoffs.
But by the way, the sounds like Rashad Penny, Pete Carroll described it as an ACL sprain, which, okay. I don't want to act like I'm a doctor or an ACL expert, and we certainly – too bad we don't have an ACL expert here. Otherwise, we could get some information on this. But I'm pretty sure you don't sprain your ACL. I think you just – it's like a mild sprain of the ACL, right, Ryan?
You're wrong. But, yeah, so a sprain, all it means is a tear. So it means how severe is the tear. So mild sprain or one,
so
two, three.
So would you say that he tore his ACL then?
Well, it depends. Like sometimes Ryan Tannehill had a partial tear of his ACL. The Dolphins didn't do a surgery on it, which they probably should have. And he ended up tearing
it. Yeah, remember he re-tore it.
He didn't re-tear it. He tore it completely. So you can have.
So let me rephrase this.
Go ahead, doctor.
Can you, if you sprain your ACL, did you tear it? Yes or no?
No, not necessarily. No, depends on the grade.
You did because it's a partial tear.
Okay, well, anyway, the point is you don't always have surgery. Someone else just sprained their ACL, and I actually looked it up because I was confused, because the ACL typically doesn't heal if you tear it all the way. It won't heal if you tear it all the way, unlike your other things in your body, like your hamstring, for example. You can rip your hamstring, and it'll heal itself. But you can partially tear it and give it rest, and sometimes it will heal itself depending on the severity of the tear. But it sounds like either way, Rashad Penny ain't playing the rest of the year.
Yeah, he's probably out for the rest of the year. Chris Carson, Joe Fan, friend of the program, Joe Fan, said that Chris Carson mentioned he's going to be working out with Rashad Penny this offseason. They're going to get his knee right. So, yeah, he is probably out. So one less player for the Seahawks. I would just point out that the Rams, I mean, I know they lost to Tampa Bay at home and that 40-55, that crazy game. That's a bad loss. They were down big. They were getting blown out in that game. But, they lost at Seattle. They lost at home to San Francisco. They lost at Pittsburgh.
To Duck Hodges.
Yeah, it wasn't. That's not a good loss.
Or was it Mason Rudolph? Was it Mason Rudolph?
Yeah, I think
that's bad. That's bad. That's a bad loss. The Mason loss is a bad Mason loss.
Pittsburgh's a playoff team.
It's a bad loss.
I think Pittsburgh needs one. We can talk about it later. They need to win.
Fine. They lost to the Ravens. So they maybe they have two losses that you could call bad. Pittsburgh, a playoff team.
What was the score of that Ravens game? Remind me.
I mean, they got blown out by the Ravens. But still just lost to Baltimore.
Since we're bringing out margin of victory, I do want to point out, and I hate doing this now because Ryan's called me Mr. Point Differential and Breach has too. The Rams have a substantially better point differential than the Seahawks. They're plus 49 compared to the Seahawks plus 20. You know who's right below the Seahawks? The Steelers at 17, who some people are calling a bad team. And the Chargers have a better point differential than the Seahawks. So that's why I was saying it's like you want to give the Rams credit for beating a good team. But it's not like the Seahawks, from top to bottom, I think, are a great team. They just happen to have a great quarterback.
Sean, you know who's a better point differential, the Seahawks and the Rams? The Cowboys. Maybe they're better than everyone.
That hurts.
They should be. As we say repeatedly, this is a 9-3 team with a 3-9 coaching staff.
If the Rams went out, and the Rams are at Dallas, at San Francisco, and at home against Arizona, and you could say, well, they won't win out. That's all going to happen. But it could happen. I mean, they could beat I think they'll be favored. They should be favored. We agree they're going to beat the Cowboys. We agree they'll beat the Cardinals. They need if they can find a way to beat the 49ers, are they getting in at 11-5?
Well, it's up to the Seahawks, because we just talked about the three games they have left. But here's the concern with the Rams. They played well the last 2 weeks. And, yes, they've played a tough schedule relatively. Their offensive line still sucks. We don't know about Jared Goff. Their defense ain't lights out. Jalen Ramsey has not been a successful trade in terms of giving up two first-round picks. So they have a lot of questions.
Their defense is good. They help the Seahawks to
no the Seahawks time. Have one player.
The Seahawks are
but they've been able to score points with that one player.
They have a
but,
great
you know, it's just like having a great
they have an elite quarterback, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. I mean, like they have a good they have a good offense. Yes, Chris Carson, what are you talking about?
They do not listen. The number two guy you just listed is DK Metcalf, who you were yelling at on Twitter for not being as muscly as he should have been.
The
Rams defense is good. It's not 49ers Patriots level, but they're fifth in DVOA.
Seahawks are the fourth best offense by DVOA. What are you talking about?
And the Rams are the fifth best defense by DVOA.
Yeah, you have lost it, old man.
Okay, well, you can hop on this train.
I don't think they're making the playoffs, but we've been saying for like a month, one good team in the NFC is not going to make the playoffs, and it's probably going to be the Rams.
Could it be the Packers?
No, because the Rams can only get to 11 games. The Packers only have to go 2-1 over their final three, and they're going to go 2-1 no matter how bad we think they are. And the thing about the Seahawks-Rams game is that this was like a do-or-die game.
You think the Packers are definitely going 2-1?
I think the Packers
and their
go
final win. Three? And their final three?
I think they probably will, but I think there's a chance they could go 1-2.
Well, of course there's a chance.
Let's take a break and we'll get to the Packers game. Do you want to add anything to the Seahawks game?
Yes, I want to add that the Seahawks, all they have to do is win out and they still win the division. So I just felt like this game meant a lot more to the Rams. It was do or die. Their backs are against the wall. They know any loss from here on out, they're not making the playoffs. For the Seahawks, it's like, well, this is the one game we can kind of blow off because if we win out, we win the division because then they'll end up in a tie at 13-3 with the 49ers and they'll have the division tiebreaker. So this, in the grand scheme of things, this loss means nothing to the Seahawks as long as they win out.
Okay. That's weird.
That's true. I mean, if they win out, they win the division and they get the first round bye.
It means something because they still had a chance for home field advantage because with the Saints losing and the Seahawks lost to the Saints, so they can't win the head-to-head tiebreaker. So if the Seahawks had won on Sunday night, they would have been looking a lot better for the top seed.
Basically, Breach, what Sean is saying, that the Seahawks should have gone 16-0 and this wouldn't have been a problem.
I'm saying the game mattered.
Yeah. Sorry, Sean.
My argument is that the game mattered today.
No, my argument is that it mattered a lot more to the Rams.
I agree with you, and that's
what it looked like, and that's how both teams played.
Or the Seahawks are a luck box, and they ran into a good team with a good defense.
You're making me agree with Brinson. I don't like this.
Brinson's done a complete 180 on the Rams all of a sudden, but that's okay.
I think
he's the new Chargers. He's going with whatever LA team's in flavor.
I just think if the Rams are playing if you look at their losses – outside of the Bucs, they're all do elite defenses, and the Bucs are the best run defense in football.
What?
Are you not aware that the Buccaneers are the best run defense in football?
No, I'm not. You telling the truth?
Oh, you're right. It's been a fact for like 7 weeks.
Man,
Brinson, do you think the Rams are going to make the playoffs, Brinson?
I think there's a lot of football left to be played.
Oh,
what a cop out. You have to get Botox. There. One of us has to get Botox if the Rams make the playoffs.
Botox?
Yeah, it's what the people do in LA.
I know what it is. My wife asked me if I – she's like, are you going to get Botox? I was like, what are you talking about? Why would I get Botox?
I've been watching YouTube videos. You probably –
that's a rude question to ask someone.
Yeah. There was a discussion at like a dinner. Like people were talking about Botox.
But it makes sense because you already get hair implants, so that would be the next step.
Nice. By the way, here's the conversation Brinson just had. Botox? Wait, I know what Botox is. We get it. Anything else?
Make like 2 minutes ago.
Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, we will talk more about the NFC playoffs.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's the butterfly effect for real.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Oh, it never fails. sure as rain, right? Right as rain. He's like, all right, let's get in and out of these games early. Let's get to breaks. we have 11 games left after talking for 30, 45 minutes. Let's dive into the Packers and Vikings and sort of look. I don't think we need to break down these games in a great amount.
Let's do it like Sean does speed dating. So we can like do musical chairs. We'll just ask each other three questions.
I just think that the Packers and the Vikings games are probably better framed as a discussion about the continued discussion about the NFC playoffs. The Packers won 20-15 over the Redskins. The Redskins covered the plus 13. Obviously, the under hit pretty easily. Aaron Jones, 24 fantasy points. Terry McLaurin had a great game. Darius Geis was injured. If you look at Aaron Rodgers, I know we got in an argument about this on our YouTube special. Oh, no. The halftime show. That's what it was. I did with Pete and Jamie. I said, Kirk Cousins has been playing better than Aaron Rodgers lately. And Pete Prisco was like, well, that's ridiculous. He's never been better at any point in time. I was like, Pete, I'm not saying he's a better player or better quarterback or whatever. I'm just telling you, he's been playing better than Aaron Rodgers has lately. Aaron Rodgers, 18-28, 195 yards, one touchdown. He still has some great throws, but he's not this offense just isn't there for the Packers. They give up 76 rushing yards and a touchdown to Adrian Peterson on 20 carries. Dwayne Haskins, who stayed in that game for a long time, was 16-27 for 170 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Also had four catches for Terry McLaurin, 57 yards and a touchdown. Aaron Jones, leading receiver for the Packers, six catches, 58 yards. What's your level? And then on the Vikings side of things, Vikings won 20-7. They were up 20-0 at halftime and then even in the fourth quarter. And then David Blau hit Kenny Galladay for a 10-yard touchdown late in the fourth quarter. It actually unfolded exactly as I predicted on the halftime show. I said that Mike Zimmer is going to go into a shell, run the ball 100 times in the second half, not worry about scoring, and then the Lions are going to find a way to storm through the back door like the last second. And that's what happened. I would say that the Lions win, I mean, the Vikings win, Sean, was substantially more convincing over a bad football team than what we saw from the Packers. If we're judging these teams on how they handle bad football teams at home, and I don't know, like, I think the Packers are at least, you gotta look at that schedule and say, could the Packers miss the playoffs as a 10-win or 11-win team? Sure, why not?
Look, I've been saying it since the opening month of the season when the discussion was, oh, this Packers team has managed to race out to this great record without the offense clicking. What happens when the offense clicks, right? They're going to be this unstoppable team. And my question was, what if they just never click? What if this is just the new norm with Aaron Rodgers? And it sounds like, Brinson, you now agree with me on this, at least for this year. This offense is unimpressive. It's not Patriots levels unimpressive, but they seem to do the same thing every week.
This is what you fired Mike McCarthy for? Like, really? I mean,
I don't see a noticeable difference. I really don't. And that's not to say Rodgers, when I criticize Rodgers, it's not Rodgers is bad now. It's just that he went from being one of the three best quarterbacks in football to now he's in that 6-10 range with Kirk Cousins, who right now Kirk Cousins is playing better than Aaron Rodgers. And the difference between both of these games is that the scores are like not that dissimilar. But to your point, I was watching a lot of the Vikings-Lions game. This was one of the most boring games I've seen all season long. Well, I had fantasy interested. You know, I'm a hopeless Bears fan that was clinging to hope the Vikings might lose a game. The Vikings got up in this game and just really, to your what you were saying, had no incentive to try anything. Whereas the Packers really struggled, I thought, to put this game away against the Redskins. They were letting the Redskins hang around to the point where I was getting interested, like there could be a potential upset. And the Redskins are very clearly one of the worst teams in football. This is an ongoing issue with the Packers where they come out and they score points right away. And for whatever reason, they just can't keep scoring points and kind of put the foot down the throat and kind of put a team away. They just don't have that in them. And you look at their record, they're the 2 seed now?
The Packers are the 2 seed. What happened was because the Saints lost and the Packers have a better conference record than the Saints, the 49ers had the best record overall, so they're 1. The Packers jumped up to the 2 seed because the Seahawks fell down to the 5 seed and the Saints fell down to the 3 seed with the loss. It's pretty
bad. Man, the Cowboys still suck.
Yep. And so you do look at the Packers remaining schedule, and we were just touching on this. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs. That said, Bears, Vikings, and at Lions, now with Stafford out, like, that's probably a win. I don't think Bears, Vikings are automatic wins, especially they have to go to Minnesota. I think they're going to lose that game. And hosting the Bears, it's not like the last year or two they've been beating up on the Bears. These have all been, for the most part, really close, low-scoring type of games. And what we saw at late in the year last year when Mitch Trubisky was actually playing well, the Bears actually beat them pretty handedly. So I think if you get good Mitch Trubisky, I think the Bears actually have a chance to win that game.
So, Sean, 1-2 for the Packers and win out for the Vikings and the Rams, and that's a wrap for the Packers.
They would miss the playoffs? You said the Rams have to go undefeated, though?
Yeah, but that means the Rams have to beat the 49ers.
Yeah.
And then the 49ers aren't getting the 1 seed. I mean, you're throwing it. I think the Rams schedule, because it has the 49ers, is less likely to have, like, the Packers might very well go 1-2, but I do not think the Rams are going 3-0.
Well, that's why you're not on the train with Brinson, Breach.
I would never get on the same train as Brinson.
I wouldn't want you on the same train. I would be like, hey, I'm not sitting in this coach class with Breach. I sit in first class.
I would take a hot air balloon to get where I'm going to avoid taking a train with Brinson. With Antonio Brown.
That's a lot.
The great irony is that John was on a train in a movie.
That is a great irony.
What?
Fun fact. Everybody knows that.
What movie?
Fast and Furious 7.
I get my family Fast 5 DVDs every year because I was an extra in the movie, guys. Maybe that could be a prize. I have a copy right here. I could give it out as a Christmas prize. For a listener who gives a good question, we'll give it out as a prize for Christmas.
That would be a good question. If you could be in any movie, what movie would you be in?
Fast 5.
I would be in Fast, whatever that movie is with John, and then I would murder him on the movie. So
I'd be in Fast 4. So I'd be like, sorry, Breach, you're the sequel.
Well, the best part is it's the one series where they keep making movies, so somehow it stays relevant. Every time a new one comes out, I'm like, I was in the 5th one, guys. Now there's like 12.
I would probably be in like Fletch.
I could see you being in Fletch. I feel like Sean would be in Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
What a classic.
I would very clearly be in a certain movie called Rogue One.
Ryan would be
Sean would definitely be like,
what would that be in, John? Sean
over the top, like, the arm wrestling movie?
Sean would cast himself as like Kylo Ren's like love interest. Or is Kylo Ren a girl or a boy? I don't even know.
It's a boy. It's Adam.
Those are, but Kylo Ren's not even in Rogue One, so you're in different territory.
Sean would be a stormtrooper that's killed within the first 3 seconds of the movie.
Ooh, I would love to be a stormtrooper.
You would?
They sometimes actually get actual famous people to do that. Like Daniel Craig was in, I think, what, last Star Wars, and they cast like one of the princes, and they had to cut them because they were too tall for stormtroopers.
You hear that sound, Sean? That's the sound of Devo stabbing himself in the face because he's going to be stuck at work at 2 in the morning.
You were the one that brought up Fast Furious in movies.
Sorry, Devo. I'll give you a copy of Fast 5 to make up for this.
So let's assume that the 49ers, Saints, Cowboys are in because we know the Saints are clinched. We know that somebody has the NFC East has to win. You get to fill out the rest of the NFC with three teams. Are you going Vikings, Packers, Seahawks? Or are you going in a different direction? Anybody going in a different direction?
Rams aren't making it.
Yeah, I don't think the Rams are making it.
I would
either.
Say Bears, Rams.
Oh, goodness. Eagles?
Bears, Rams, Buccaneers.
I think the Bucks are eliminated.
I was being sarcastic.
And real quick, I don't think the Saints are going to win out. I don't think they're going to go 3-0 over the last 3 weeks. And I think the winner of the NFC West, whoever wins that Week 17 game between the 49ers and Seahawks, is going to get the number one overall seed. The Saints close out with the Colts, Titans, and Panthers. I think they're going to lose one of those games. I'm not sure to who, but it's going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can talk about this in a second, but the Titans have a tough road to hoe. But if, I mean,
why don't we dive right in on the Titans? We got four games we got to talk about. So let's just move on to the Titans. The Titans, whammied. The Oakland Raiders on Sunday afternoon. Tennessee's just flat out rolling right now. 42-21.
MVP.
Ryan Tannehill, 21 of 27 for 391 yards, three touchdowns, one interception. He also had Derrick Henry, 18 carries, 103 yards, two touchdowns. And my man, A.J. Brown, started him in a fantasy playoff game. Five catches, 153 yards, and two touchdowns, including a 91-yard score. He's an enormous human being. I love him like I love members of my family. I don't know why. I just do. By the way, good job of the Patriots for not drafting A.J. Brown or Debo Samuel and taking N'Keal Harry instead. That was smart of you.
That was weird.
They once drafted Sony Michel over Nick Chubb, so.
Yeah.
Not that surprising.
Yeah. Derek Carr, 25 of 34, 263 yards, two touchdowns. Somehow it's 115 passer rating. And let's see. Let's do the math. Like I watched Derek Carr play. I know he wasn't very good. And yet I'm going to divide 7.7 yards per attempt every time. He does this every time. It's unbelievable.
Imagine what it would have been if he didn't chuck that fourth down ball out of the end zone and actually threw it to someone.
People were hot and bothered about that.
What was that about? Did he talk about it after the game?
You got that's what got me blocked by David Carr. I'm not going to get into
it. My favorite part, I don't know what he said after the game, but like as he's scrambling out to his right, he's like trying to motion receivers over that side, and he ends up throwing it away, and he keeps on like motioning, like yelling at his guys to get over. It's like, yeah, dude, they weren't over there. Maybe throw it to where they are instead of throwing it into the stands. Like the fact that he was blaming it on other people.
He also had a touchdown pass to somebody.
Good start.
That's someone else.
No. But like, I'll tell you who it is.
Was it Rico Gafford?
No, it was Fabian Moreau. He did throw a 49-yard touchdown pass. I'm sure he caught it at the line of scrimmage.
Foster Moreau.
It was Foster. Yeah. Is it Fabian Moreau?
He's a quarterback back in the day.
Yeah. So anyway, he throws a touchdown pass to Foster Moreau, and like he's like Foster Moreau pops open on like play action, and he is sitting there wide open. And like Derek Carr, like pass. He's like, hold on, stop. And then like he throws it to him. It's like, just throw the ball when you get out of your break. It was very weird.
Do you think that they've been practicing before and Foster Moreau just kept running? Like he ran to the parking lot. He had to go get him at the grocery store. No, you stop inside the boundaries.
The announcers like, why didn't he? Because it was Jay Feely and it was Trent Green, right?
I don't know. You know the announcers better than anyone on the planet.
I think it was Trent. Yeah, it was Trent Green and then Jay Feely's on the sidelines. And he's like, I don't know why he just didn't throw it. Like, why is he throwing the football? Anyway, the Raiders are now 6-7. look, we're not here to bury the Raiders, but I will say that that ill-fated Raiders under 6.5 wins bet that I made the day Antonio Brown was cut is now suddenly got a little life.
By the way, you forgot to mention the biggest play of the game, the turnover. It looked like it was going to be a big man picks touchdown return.
Oh, yeah.
Ryan Tannehill tracked him down.
And absolutely – and, like, I should have captioned that tweet I've sent out. You know, a bunch of retweets. No big deal. I should have captioned it better. But it's like it should have been like, wait for it. Wait for it. Because, like, Tannehill gets blocked by one of the Raiders players. He threw – it's like the ball's hit. It pops up in the air. Raiders – big Raiders defensive lineman picks it. He's going the other way, and he's running. And he's like – and he thinks he's going to score. Like, he's got 30 yards of space in front of him, and he is running. He's got blockers. He's got, like, a whole horde of people. And, like, Tannehill's chasing after him. He gets blocked to the side, and he, like, veers out. It was like a car that gets, like, sideswiped in a race. He goes, and, like, veers out to the left. And then all of a sudden, you see him come flying back in. He sprints out ahead of everybody, and he absolutely truck sticks this guy. It was awesome. And I mean, is Ryan Tannehill a top five MVP candidate?
He's a top five defensive player. He had Tyreek Hill speed with Nick Bosa hitting power on that rundown. That was an insane play.
And if we were only receiver, Texas A&M.
But I'll give you real quick. So Tannehill took over the starting job in week 7. Since then, the Titans are 6-1. They are averaging 31.4 points per game, which is the second highest in the NFL behind only the Ravens since week 7. And they have 27 offensive touchdowns since week 7, which is also the second highest in the NFL. So basically, this Titans offense has somehow turned into the greatest show on turf with Ryan Tannehill. So I would love to put him in the, I don't know if it puts him in the MVP conversation, probably not because it's 2-8 in the season, but it does move Adam Gase down 7 notches. He went from like 7th worst coach ever to now maybe 1st or 2nd. Tannehill throws a touchdown, so I think.
What's impressive what Tannehill's doing is this isn't like, you look at all, like Derek Carr, for example, quarterback, where it's like when they're having success, you look at those throws they're making, you're just like, oh, like any schmuck. Any competent quarterback would be doing this and letting his guys get yak. He's throwing the ball downfield and like, he's like heat checking. Like he's like has so much confidence right now. Like one of his touchdown passes across the field off his back foot. It's a great play by his target. But he's putting it up with confidence. He entered the week leading the league in yards per attempt at 9.1. He attempted 27 passes on Sunday and he averaged 14.5 yards per attempt. It is incredible. And I actually think I don't think anyone outside of Lamar and Russ can win MVP. So when I say he's in the MVP conversation, I don't mean he has a chance to win it. But when we go and rank our 5 candidates this week, you look, Deshaun had a stinker. Dak has had multiple, or like a product
might,
of his team around him.
I might Tannehill too.
I'm putting him in my top 5, I think. Because I don't know what, like, quarterback you're putting over
him. If you're talking about pure value, like, they literally sucked as a team, and they replaced Marcus Mariota with Ryan Tannehill, and now they're awesome.
Well, you know, real quick. You apologizing to every week, by the way, Brinson?
Who? Arthur.
Arthur Smith.
Oh, yeah.
You should write a personal note.
Lying, baby.
But you know what? That's also on the coaching staff for letting Marcus Mariota play for so long and not getting a quarterback in there.
But he wasn't a fifth-year option. I'm sure they were like, well, we're paying him $20 million.
They had Tannehill in training camp. It's not like they traded for him in September. So they saw what he could do in the offseason. They had to know during camp that Tannehill was clearly a better quarterback, yet they still stuck with Mariota. So that's kind of on the coaching staff. I think you could still blame them a little bit for that bad start because they kept him in. But to Sean's point with the yards per completion, so we talk a lot about Raiders defenders come say, well, Derek Carr has a huge yards per completion. Why are you ripping him? And the big difference is the fact that, as Sean said, Tannehill throws it downfield. His air yards, so this is his average completed air yards this year so far, is 7.2 yards per completion, which is 4th in the NFL. And he's only behind people who wing it, like Matthew Stafford, Jameis Winston, and Dak Prescott. So it's a pretty incredible to see what he's done.
It was the Titans' third 40-point game of the year, their most in a season since 1962. Their 552 yards, total yards of offense, is the most total yards since they became the Titans back in 1997. They scored 21 unanswered points in the second half. Tannehill joins Russell Wilson and John Hadel as the only three quarterbacks in the Super Bowl era to have a passer rating of 130 or higher in 4 straight games. His first interception since week 9. And they're 6-1 with him under center. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. This is like, this story isn't getting nearly enough attention.
Well, what's funny is when they beat the Chiefs, we were talking about, like, oh, they're playing spoiler. Like, we didn't realize that that might be a tiebreaker when it comes to seeding. And, like, if the Chiefs slip up, the Titans could, like, if they win the division, overtake the Chiefs. Like, we weren't thinking about that as a playoff tiebreaker. We're thinking, like, oh, how could the Chiefs blow this game?
Well, one other team that should be worried about the Titans, too, the Buffalo Bills. They played a football game against the Baltimore Ravens, and they kept it close but could not win. Ravens 24, Bills 17. Ravens covered the -6, as promised on this podcast. The under 44.5 hit. Lamar Jackson, 25 fantasy points, threw for 2 passing touchdowns. Didn't have a great first half. Neither did Josh Allen. It was really windy out there. You could tell it was affecting both quarterbacks' accuracy. But Lamar gets, you know, figures out a way to do it and, you know, does what Lamar Jackson does, which is, you know, put up crazy stats and highlight real plays. I mean, all over the place. The dude's just ridiculous. And like, it really is like every single week there's a new play. And Lamar Jackson was asked about breaking someone's ankles after the game. And here's what he said.
That's God given. I never go outside and just practice by myself, shaking the air, nothing like that. But, you know, that's God given. And when I see a guy, I'm not trying to let him tackle me. You know, I'm trying to get yards, score touchdowns, whatever it takes to cheat the game, win the game.
Sean, he flat out broke someone's, I don't remember who it was, some defender's legs in the backfield. Like, it was like the ultimate, it was just a triple deke, and you're broken. You're broken as a human.
Yeah, and this was kind of the second straight week where I feel like it wasn't the Lamar Jackson during the Ravens breakout where he was putting up 300 yards and all that, because it was a good defense and it was a playoff type of game. But every single week he shows you he can win this way now. It doesn't have to be the big blowouts against these bad teams. Like, a good defense can come in there and challenge him, and he can overcome those challenges. Again, they only scored 24 points, but the other side of this is that this Ravens defense continues to creep up and up as a legitimately, I want to call them, a good defense. And Josh Allen came into this game on the best run of his career, his last 8 games. We talked about this many times on this podcast. He was playing like a top 12, top 15 quarterback in half a season of work. That kind of all went out the window in this game. And I don't want to, it's not all Josh Allen's fault. He was under a lot of pressure, sacked 6 times. But he did miss a lot of throws downfield. But I think it's more of just a testament to this Bills defense, because we have seen a lot of defenses kind of get, I don't want to say carved up by the Bills, but the Bills have been able to put up points and move the ball. And they weren't able to find much success against the Ravens defense. So again, Ravens have been doing this for a while, but they can continue to prove in my eyes that they are not just the best team, but the most complete team on both sides of the ball.
They sacked Josh Allen 6 times, you mentioned, Sean. He was hit 12 more. I watched a good part of this game. The first 3 series on 3rd down, here's how it ended. Josh Allen overthrew a receiver downfield on 3rd and 4 to start the game. The next 3rd down, overthrew someone else. And then I think the next series on 2nd down, he overthrew someone that could have moved the chains for a 1st down. So he sort of reverted back to some of the things that have frustrated people with him, that he has been frustrating for people. But after the game, the Ravens said they blitz him like crazy. That was a plan. And I think they blitz him on something like 30 plays. And he was, I think, completed 1 pass out of however many attempts he had, 1 for 24, something like that. So that was an issue. It wasn't all his fault. And now things get really tough for the Bills. So they're 9-4. They're the 5th seed. Next 2 or 3 are on the road at Pittsburgh, at New England, and then the Jets. So they need to win at least 1 game, I feel like. The Steelers have some things they have to do at 8-5. And then the Titans are the 7th seed, but New Orleans, Houston twice. And I feel like the Titans still have like an inside track at one of those playoff spots because they're playing so incredibly well. John mentioned he thought that the Saints might lose again. It could be to the Titans. And the Texans suddenly are terrible. So, I mean, what if the Titans go 3-0?
Bills still have a 92% chance, according to Sportsline, to make the playoffs.
They have it because of how the schedule sets up. If the Titans go 3-0, that means the Texans lost 2 games and can finish no better 9-7, which means the Bills just need to get 1 win, like you said, to get to 10. If the Bills beat the Steelers, that's basically going to make them a lock because they'll have a head-to-head over the Steelers, plus either a sweep. If the Titans and Texans split, that means they can't finish any better than 10-6. So the fact that the Texans and Titans play each other twice over the – final 3 weeks helps the Bills a lot, because one of those teams has to lose once and one of those teams might lose twice. And one thing on this, what the Ravens defense did, if I'm Bill Belichick or if I'm a team that might be playing the Ravens in the playoffs, I really pay attention to how the Ravens attack Josh Allen, because we mentioned how well Josh Allen played in this game. If the Ravens had one advantage that other teams didn't have going against Josh Allen, this is what they see in practice every day. RG3 probably runs the Bills offense better than Josh Allen does. So you get to see what a scrambling mobile quarterback does all the time. And that's easy to prepare for. The hardest thing to do when you're playing offenses like this is that you only get three practices to prepare. You can't prepare for Lamar Jackson like that. It's even hard to prepare for a guy like Josh Allen like that. But the Ravens, they're the one team that have that, because that is how their team's set up, because that's what their scout team does anyway. So I think the Ravens said, here, this is what we need to stop a mobile quarterback. We're just going to blitz all the time. Josh Allen started off 1 for 7. He didn't have any running room at all. He only ran 2 times for 9 yards, and he was the NFL's second leading rusher for quarterbacks, I think. So they shut him down. And so if I'm another team, I'm saying, all right, well, maybe that's the secret to being Lamar. Maybe I need to blitz him nonstop, keep him from running, and kind of do what the Ravens did to the Bills. So I thought that was interesting, but I think the Bills are a lock for the playoffs.
The Bills, I think the Bills might be checkmated on the AFC East. They're not, like, the Patriots haven't clinched the division, but even if, because the Bills, if the Patriots lose twice, the Bills could still jump them if the Bills went out. But, the Patriots have the Dolphins and the Bengals as their other two matchups. And if the Bills go 3-0 and the Patriots go 2-1, the Patriots still have they would have the same record head to head, they'd split same record division, and then common games would be the tiebreaker, and the Patriots would have that over the Bills. So unless you think the Patriots can lose two games, the Bills look like a pretty safe bet. Like they don't have that route available to them. But I do think that the Bills will probably make the playoffs, as Breach pointed out, because of that Houston Tennessee situation.
There we go, Bills fans. We think you're going to make the playoffs. You're a lock.
Broncos, Texans. We mentioned the Texans. Bad day to have a bad day for the Houston Texans. They lost to Drew Lock and the Denver Broncos 38-24. The Broncos obviously covered the +8. Big money line winner. The over of 42.5 hit pretty easily. And Drew Lock and Deshaun Watson both had 29 fantasy points. Is Drew Lock the answer, Ryan Wilson?
Yeah, he's the answer right now. I mean, it wasn't Joe Flacco, it wasn't Brandon Allen, and it took forever to get Drew Lock out there because he's on the IR for the first half of the season. And he looked good. Noah Fant looked good, which we haven't seen a lot of this season, so that's a nice development. And second-round pick in Drew Lock, you see what you have in him, and you go from here. And I think they're in better shape than a lot of teams. As for the Texans, maybe they thought the season was over last week when they beat the Patriots, and they just didn't practice this week, and they sort of just hurried to the stadium today when they found out they had a game. But it was 38-3 in the third quarter before they woke up and sort of scored some points down the end that really didn't matter. I think this goes back to, in large part, Bill O'Brien. He's the coach. I don't know what Bill O'Brien was doing, and, you know, he said that before. He got out coached by Vic Fangio, which a lot of people haven't been able to say this year. So, yeah, it's a problem for the Texans coming off their biggest win of the season to lay a turd like this. John McClain, the longtime beat reporter for the Texans, I thought he was going to lose his mind. He's at his best on Sundays when the Texans are losing, and he's tweeting. And
yeah,
he was fired up today. He said this is the worst loss he can remember, I think, in the Bill O'Brien era, which I don't think that's true. But in the moment, he probably didn't feel great. So
didn't they lose to Miami after Ryan Mallett overslept his alarm?
Yeah.
That's what was worse. Did let's see if this will play. I don't know if this is his sound or not. But.
By the rookie Lock.
Did you see Drew Lock's touchdown celebration?
Yeah, he's going full Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah, so apparently, he's got this huge like sleeve with the plays on it that they give him, and apparently his teammates are all giving him hell all week because he's got this giant sleeve, and they're like calling him Buzz Lightyear. So when he got the touchdown, he ran and he was like pressing, going pew, 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 acting like Buzz Lightyear. The video is pretty cool. I highly recommend you check it out. But the Broncos, I'm not going to sit here and stand for the Broncos and say that this is a good season for them. Disaster season. But
but
a little short of your playoff expectations.
Don't speak too soon, Wilson. They're not eliminated.
I know. I want to hear. I want to hear what he says after the butt, because I think there's the playoff push comment was coming. Someone tweeted at me and said, "Is Brinson back on?" I quoted you. I was like, "I could see them making a push down the stretch here," which is 100% what you're about to say. So go on and say it.
No. I'm not going to say it. They're not going to make a push. It's over. They're three games back in the playoffs. It's over. But here's the but: Drew Lock is playing well. Guys like Noah Fant looks like a find in terms of a first round pick. They got players. You're seeing like this nucleus of young players. Cortland Sutland is a superstar. Finding guys like that and being able to look forward to next year and say, okay, we're putting together some wins down the stretch, even though we're beating teams we have no business beating. You have no business going into Houston and whipping up on Houston. They did exactly that. They lost a bunch of one score games early on, but they're either 5-8. They're salvaging the season. Like, we're not going to look at the season and be like, Vic Fangio has to go and all these players are terrible. John Elway's going to be off the hook if he found Drew Lock and if he found all these players. So,
hey, quick question.
Yeah.
Does Joe Flacco make the Bears a better team next year?
Yeah.
Joe Flacco's retirement ceremony is going to be March 5th. I'm calling that now. Put me down for that.
Why March
5th? What if the Bears want to sign him, though, John?
He's going to say, sorry, I'm retiring on March 5th. Be at my press conference.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not interested in competing with Jameis Winston for a starting job.
I hate you guys so much.
You know what's funny, though, is that the Broncos totally had Drew Lock on training wheels in his first start against the Chargers. Kind of like, we're going to throw him out there. We're not going to do anything too difficult. And then it was like they put him on a bike down a hill that was going off the side of a Grand Canyon in this game. They let him do anything. They busted out the whole playbook. His first throw of the entire game, first play from scrimmage, I think was like a 40-yard throw to Noah Fant, where there was a Texans defender right there. I think the play was from Houston.
A-plus breach analogy, by the way.
Been a while.
The Broncos were at their own 8-yard line. Locke takes shotgun, goes back into the end zone. You're a rookie quarterback. You're already dropping back in your end zone. You get sacked and cost your team 2 points. This game's over before it starts. He throws a dart about 25 yards downfield that turns into a 48-yard gain. And that was really – he was making high-risk throws with big payoffs. His touchdown pass to Noah Fant ended that first drive, and that was also a laser right up the middle that there was a defender right there. It's a throw that I don't think a lot of rookie quarterbacks would necessarily make, and he did it. And after that first series – it was just like, my God, like the Texans, I knew their secondary was bad, but they're not going to be able to stop them. And then they couldn't.
Four of his first eight passes went 25 yards or more. And at halftime, he had as many touchdowns, three, as incompletions, 16 of 19 for 235 yards and three touchdowns.
Not you know bad. Who this makes look really bad? The Patriots offense.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Hey, on the Texans. I didn't watch a lot of this game. I don't really know why.
Well, because it was a blowout right away, and the Texans were in garbage time. Like, at halftime, people were like, this could be a game where Watson doesn't even play, like, in parts of the third quarter.
Yeah. Hopkins finished with 7 catches, 120 yards, and a touchdown. Noah Fant, by the way, 4 catches, 113 yards, and a touchdown. All right, so what do we think about this race, then? We mentioned Buffalo and Pittsburgh. Actually, you know, let's talk about the Pittsburgh game too, and then we'll sort of loop in and do a wrap up on the AFC playoff race. Pittsburgh sneaks by the Arizona Cardinals. Boy, was it a sneak! Your man's Mike Tomlin, Ryan, who deserves love for Coach of the Year. Certainly has done an incredible job. I guess he didn't try to blow it all up, but his punter tried to blow it all up. Didn't get the call that the fake was off. He takes off running straight into the line. He gets swallowed up by two Cardinals defenders. Steelers hold on to win 23-7. Kyler Murray, 20 of 30 for 194 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 picks, including some terrible throws. Duck Hodges, 16 of 19, 152 yards, 1 touchdown, and several ducks caught. Benny Snell, somebody named White Jr. ran.
Kareth White. He's actually the backup to Devin Singletary at FAU last year.
Ah,
they got him off the Bears practice squad, Sean. Thank you for that.
Deontay Johnson, by the way, threw a touchdown pass in this game, didn't he?
No, he returned
a punt. Returned a punt for a touchdown, and he caught a touchdown pass. Those two touchdowns, fun fact, Ryan, more than Antonio Brown had this season.
Wah, wah.
Deontay Johnson taken with a pick that they got for Antonio Brown.
So Drew Hodges, Duck Hodges is now 3-0 as a starter, I believe. And the saddest thing you'll ever see is when they pan to the sidelines and Mason Rudolph is standing on the edge of the sidelines with his toes almost dipping into the pool, helmet on, like he's going to go in. Mason, you're not going in.
I tweeted this and people give me crap for it, but like, I think it's a fair point. And Aditi Kinkabala of NFL Network replied to me with she was like, you know, an affirmative reply. And so I feel better about it. But like, for all the good Mike Tomlin's done, what took him so long to bounce off of Mason and two Duck Hodges? Like, Duck Hodges is
long. How long was it?
Well, the problem is they shouldn't have gone back to Mason when, because didn't Hodges play in the Chargers game and he looked decent and that was when Rudolph was concussed? They should have just stayed with Hodges at that point. I mean,
Mason Rudolph has started 8 games this year. That's
Mason was fine until he got the dude who knocked out of him in that Ravens game. I'm not sure when that, we'll look and see when that is on the schedule. After that, you play him for 2 or 3 games and you figure it out and then you move on from him. When was the Ravens game?
Week 5.
Yeah.
Okay, week 5. And then he set out the Chargers game. How many games did he play after that until he got benched?
5 games after that.
All right, so three games you should have taken him out. They didn't. Whatever. I mean, look, man.
Man, you will defend. I like this. You're like, you know you're not going to win the Super Bowl with the Steelers, so you're not high-strung about it. But
I
you're
said 8 wins is my Super Bowl. Where I've won.
Also, yeah. Like, congrats, Ryan.
Yeah. Duck Hodges is 6 feet tall. He's a duck calling champion in Alabama. He was undrafted at an FCS school. You're like, bitch, Mason Rudolph, their second round pick now.
Any human with two eyes can tell you that Mason Rudolph isn't
aren't you the
working
same,
out.
Aren't you the same goober stick that were like, under no circumstances can we bitch Phillip Rivers, no matter how many interceptions he throws, he deserves to be out there.
That's a ridiculous comparison.
Well, they have Tyrod Taylor behind him, who's a known commodity. It's not a young guy that – yeah, I agree with Wilson. That's
yeah, for, I was going to say –
No, Brinson. I agree with Brinson, sorry. Yeah. Wow. That's not the same comparison. Also, like, the Chargers are in the playoff race.
Yeah, like your team's winning games despite Mason Rudolph, and like Duck Hodges has shown, it's not like he's good, but he just scrambles around enough and makes a couple of throws. And in the words of Mike Tomlin, he doesn't kill us. Like, that's all you need. Mason Rudolph kills you. He stinks.
I'll just say this. My team has been successful for many years. You two numbnuts pull for losers.
Hey,
so suck at losers.
You know what? Your team, did you read the report? Buddy, pal, little chatter. Kevin Colbert, your man Omar, might be coming to Carolina, might be coming to my team.
Oh, boy.
Colbert, if Colbert leaves, Steelers are done. Finished.
All right, who's your quarterback again?
Phillip Rivers. We'll talk more about that.
Anyway.
I'm sure David Tepper's listening. I have two friends who said that they will buy season tickets. Two friends who live in Raleigh will buy Panthers season tickets at Rivers signs of the Panthers.
One is Will Brinson and one is Will Brinson's doll named Phil.
That'll convince a billionaire to do what Brinson demands. Quickly, I just want to say this about Kyler Murray. He's actually really good. That offensive line sucks so incredibly bad that he doesn't have any. He was sacked 3 times in the first, must have been like 16 or 17 minutes early on into the second quarter. He had no room to move the last series. He was sacked 3 more times. He threw 3 interceptions. One came in the very last play. His worst play of probably the season. He could have run in for a touchdown to tie the game after that crazy – no, it wasn't after the punt, but they could have tied the game, I think, in the third quarter. And he instead threw the ball right to T.J. Watt in the end zone. And,
that was before the punt.
Okay. Well, either way, it should have been a touchdown. He could have –
yeah, it wasn't a tie, but it would have cut it to the touchdown would have cut the lead significantly. That pick was terrible.
Yeah. The first pick that Joe Hayden made a great play. The last pick was the end of the game. That pick, there's no explanation for. And just part of being a rookie.
Cliff Kingsbury has to make the offense horizontal when they can't block the pass rush. And they couldn't block Bud Dupree, and they couldn't block T.J. Watt. All right, what do we think about the seeding in the AFC?
Well, I'll say this quickly.
Where's your head at as a Steelers fan who desperately wants to make the playoffs and upset Baltimore or New England?
And I want my Super Bowl. I'm happy.
Duck Hodges over Brady and Gillette.
Breach mentioned this, talking about they play the Bills next, the Steelers do, in Pittsburgh, their last home game of the year. Breach mentioned this about how the Patriots should pay attention to what the Ravens did to Josh Allen in terms of blitzing him. The Steelers didn't blitz Kyler Murray, who's, I think you would argue, probably more athletic than Josh Allen. They're similar type players, but they have a better pass rush in the front four, so that's probably what they'll do next week against Josh Allen. I don't know if they're going to win this game. The Bills are a really good football team. Fun fact, those two coaches matching up against each other, went to college with both of them. This is the first time I think they faced each other too in the regular season.
Are you guys all going to go?
No. No. It's in Pittsburgh. I'm not going to that.
Are you going to go to William & Mary and watch it?
Yeah, I'm already there.
So the Steelers schedule?
Yeah.
Are you going to go to William & Mary?
I've already been there, John. I have my diploma.
Don't you go to graduate school? The Steelers schedule looks difficult. So you have the Bills, the Jets, the Ravens. But if you look at what they've done this year, they've been kind of the one team that has done really well against mobile quarterbacks. Like the 49ers, great defense, but they've been thrashed by mobile quarterbacks this year. You had them against Russell Wilson back in week two, and even though they lost Ben Roethlisberger and they were playing Mason Rudolph, who can barely throw a forward pass, they almost won that game. Final score was
28-6. They won the game, if not for that overturned defensive pass, offensive pass interference.
So they probably should have won that game. Then you look at that week five game against the Ravens, the one where Mason Rudolph went out with a concussion, where Duck Hodges, who probably had not held a football in a month because he was out doing his duck calls, gets tossed into the game, and they still only lose that game in overtime. And that was against
Juju Smith-Schuster fumbles.
And they probably should have won that game, and that was against Lamar. And then you look at the Cardinals game.
They beat Phillip Rivers, noted mobile quarterback.
And by the way, Breach, Lamar had three interceptions in that game.
Well, I'm saying, and then you look at what they did to Kyler, who threw three interceptions. So the Steelers' defense has done really well against mobile quarterbacks, and they have Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson left. And it makes it, you know, like the Ravens game, people probably look at the schedule and say, hey, that's a loss, but they should have won that first time. I don't think it would be crazy if the Steelers go 2-1, and I think 3-0 might be a little crazy, but.
No, it would be. Well, let me ask you this, because I'm going to be realistic. I think if they go 9-7, do they make it?
No, I don't think they make it at 9-7.
Really?
I think 10 wins is absolutely what it's going to take, because
you think the Texans are going to win two games?
The Bills only need one more win to get to 10. So then you're at Houston and Tennessee, who play each other this week, which means one of them is going to be at 9 wins after this week, and then that team would only need to win one more time over the final 2 weeks. So I just think that 10 wins is going to be what it takes to get that final spot in the AFC.
The Titans lose this weekend. They're in deep doo-doo.
Titans lose?
Because then they have to play at New Orleans, or New Orleans, then they have to play at Houston.
All right, well, so both Houston and Tennessee are 8-5. The winner of that game will be obviously 9-5 and in first place in the division. The loser will be 8-6, and depending on what happens with Pittsburgh and Buffalo, Houston could wake up. This is why that Broncos game is so inexplicable. Like, Houston could wake up next Monday and be out of the playoffs.
Well, they weren't awake today.
Ryan Hanks.
Got him.
I'm out.
Dunked on Bob, Bill O'Brien. It's a Bob dunk.
I think
you guys think the Steelers have to win at least two more.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the Steelers will win two more.
Who they beat?
Buffalo and the Jets.
Okay. What's the early line on the Bills game? -3 Steelers? That's my guess.
The Steelers are 68%.
It's 1.5. Steelers are favored by 1.5.
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh.
It is a fascinating game. So, thumbs up or thumbs down?
What's the over-under, like 12?
Under.
So, who thinks the Steelers are going to make the playoffs?
I do.
I do not.
You don't?
I'm going to be the contrarian. I don't think they're going to make it.
Viking Steelers Super Bowl still alive, then I throw all these predictions in y'all's faces.
So Breach, you have two teams from the South making it?
Yeah, I think the Titans and Texans are going to make it from the South. I don't know how it's going to work, but
you just pointed out that they play each other and therefore they're going to kill each other.
Hey, this is just worth noting. Right now, it's looking, and this is 7 days in advance, so who the hell knows? The weather is looking like 13 miles an hour wind, snow showers throughout the day in Heinz Field. Who do you think that favors, Buffalo or Pittsburgh?
Buffalo.
Favors the defense. I mean, the problem, I don't know.
The team that runs the ball better.
Yeah.
I think Buffalo, because their quarterback can just turn into a running back.
But see, that was the thing, and we didn't really touch on that. But the thing that surprised me about that Bills-Ravens game is that, like, neither one of those teams ran the quarterback. Like, Lamar ran 11 times. It was like for 40 yards or something. They didn't do any design runs for Josh Allen.
They couldn't. They were blitzing silly. He had no ability to do anything. He was suffocated the whole day.
They didn't call it design runs.
I don't like he was. They had people in his face, so I don't know how
but
many.
You wouldn't be blitz on a design run.
You can do run blitzes. Those things exist. Okay. He's blitzed like 30 plays.
This is like the like the opposite of Belichick Saban talking about football.
Yeah, it really is. All right.
There's run blitzes.
Make sure to tune in that Tuesday night, 9 p.m. on HBO. It's really good. Any more AFC takeaways?
What are we gonna do? Who do we think is gonna win the South? Because three of us here think the Steelers are making the playoffs, which means we all think the Bills are making the playoffs, which means it's Houston or Tennessee. One's out, one's in.
I mean, this is reactionary to what we saw today, but I'm not betting against the Titans. They look awesome. Yeah, they're awesome. They are. Their offense is incredible. It's a revelation.
What if the Browns went out?
That would be fascinating.
That would be the impossible happening.
It would make them 9-7.
They would have to be Baltimore, they play the Cardinals, the Ravens, and the Bengals.
9-7's not getting you. I don't think 9-7. I think you got to have 10.
Yeah, that's kind of what we decided while you were up.
Grabbing a beer.
I think you're getting there. Yeah, I was going to say.
I was like, as soon as I opened that beer, I was like, why did I do that? I don't even want this beer.
Yeah, you do. Comes
an hour after he was going to make coffee at 11:30 at night.
I'd really be drinking if I'd made coffee. All right. Browns, Bengals.
I watched every minute of this. So, again, two people on planet Earth watch this game, me and Breach.
Well, let's talk about Odell Beckham real quick. We'll probably talk about this a little bit after Monday night. But, you know, Baker Mayfield gets up after the game. And is asked about OBJ's injury, which is a sports hernia injury, and Baker, being the big leader that he is, decides to throw his medical staff under the bus.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, it wasn't handled right. He's not able to run as well as he should be able to, as well as he knows, and that's frustrating for him. You can sense that's some of his frustration, where that comes from, so... it wasn't handled the right way in our training room, so we'll, you know, it is what it is. And so his not 100% is still good enough for us.
What do you mean? What was not handled right?
I think it could have been addressed earlier on. Yeah, I think looking back on, obviously, hindsight's 20/20, but, yeah, he probably would have missed first two, one or two, you know, just based on the fact that it was during training camp. But it is what it is. We're here right now. It's too late to do that, and he's fighting through pain. He's playing through pain. So that shows you what type of guy he is.
What grade do you give him there, Breach, for blasting the docs?
I mean, if we're grading throwing people under the bus, that's an A+.
It sure is.
That is talk about – this whole thing just totally blew up with the whole report about Odell needing sports hernia surgery and playing through it, and he's going to wait till the offseason to make it happen. And after the game, what we just heard Baker say is, hey, he probably should have had surgery in August during training camp. Then he only missed 1 or 2 weeks, and then he would have been healthy. And so this is, I mean, this is, I don't even know if this is throwing under the bus. This is like driving a bus off a cliff with only the training staff in the bus, because there's no, and Baker tried to apologize on Twitter, and there's no way to I hope he doesn't get injured. Because I would not want to go into that training room after making a comment like that.
Yeah, seriously. He's like, hey, Baker, unfortunately, we have to pull out your toenails.
I know.
Bad news, pal.
That tooth is looking a little loose. We're going to go ahead and pull that out.
It's like buying a bus, driving to the doctor's house, and like running him over repeatedly with it. Hey, look, I don't know what's going to happen. I think having to have surgery after the in the offseason is going to hurt your little trade thing, Ryan.
No, that's not part of the plan, dude. I ain't worried about a little hernia surgery. He'll be off the market. People will be like, oh, Odell Beckham, he's washed up. He's 27 years old. And then comes Bill Belichick. Just like this. You can't hear him. He's a silent assassin. Takes Odell Beckham back to New England. Everything's solved. Baker Mayfield played like crap in this game. As I said, I watched the entire game. He was 11 of 24 for 192 yards, two interceptions. Breach knows it should have been three interceptions. They returned one late in the game. They overturned the interception because of defensive pass interference they finally decided to call, which I was – why now this week? They did that a couple times this week in different games. I don't – Al Riveron woke up from the coma. I have no idea what happened, so he's back. What is it?
They are changing a lot of these now.
You know why they're doing it, I think? Here's another conspiracy theory that I was talking to Belichick about when we were talking about the Odell Beckham trade. I think now that we're getting closer to the playoffs, They want to be like, oh, don't forget, we made all these rules changes, so please notice that we're doing it now. We didn't do it the first 13 weeks because we were too lazy to. But now when something happens in the playoffs, just be assured that we're going to overturn the call, unless your name's Sean Payton.
Coaches should be more, like, honestly, the last 3 weeks of the season, they should be way more aggressive about challenging pass interference. They're flipping them left and right. Like, they're buzzing down and changing them like crazy. It's unbelievable how much they're doing it.
If you want an example of how bad of a coach Freddie Kitchens is, this game is it. The Bengals literally have the worst rushing defense in the NFL. If Ryan and Will are my offensive linemen, Sean could probably rush for 100 yards on them. And at the two-minute warning in the first half, and mind you, the Browns have one of the top rushers in the NFL with Nick Chubb. At the two-minute warning in the first half, they had run the ball four times. Four times. And as Ryan just mentioned, Baker Mayfield had a horrible game. So instead of running the ball with the one of the best running backs in the NFL against one of the worst rushing defenses, Freddie Kitchens said, no, I am going to let my quarterback, who's clearly off, he got off to a slow start, never looked good, I'm just going to let Baker Mayfield keep throwing passes until he gets 10 interceptions, because that is looked like what they were planning to do here. It was mind-boggling that he only gave his running backs four carries up until the two-minute warning of the first half. They gave Nick Chubb the ball a few more times in the second half. He ended up with 15 carries for 106 yards. But it is just insane that Freddie Kitchens is sitting on the sideline calling these plays. I honestly just think he doesn't pull it out of a hat because he doesn't have a hat on the sideline, but maybe he's got, like, slips in a pocket. And he's just like, oh, a post route. And he's just pulling multiple slips out and putting them together and then telling that to Baker in the helmet. It was just bad play calling by the Browns. The Browns could have won this game by three touchdowns if they would have just handed it to Nick Chubb on every single play.
Hey, he averaged 7 yards per carry. I said this going in. I was like, just run Nick Chubb outside and throw the ball to Kareem Hunt. That's all you have to do all game, and you will slaughter the Bengals.
And let me ask you this, Brinson. You be Freddie Kitchens, and I'll be a reporter.
Hey, I just pooped myself.
he said all season that he doesn't coach penalties. So
I didn't coach him to penalties.
Freddie, let me ask you this. If you don't coach penalties, why does your team lead the league in penalties by a large margin? What would you attribute that to?
Listen, here's the deal. I don't know why macaroni and cheese has so many different cheeses in it, okay? I don't understand it. I don't need to know it. All I know is that when you have a quarterback like Baker Mayfield, that's your macaroni, and you have Odell Beckham, that's your cheese. You mix them together. Any more questions?
I mean, it is a Saturday Night Live skit. I mean, I don't know. You can't bring him back.
You really can't.
I think they might bring him back.
You can. I mean, it'll make for fun times for us. But
we said it last with that Jeremy Fowler report came out about the Browns weren't expecting to win this year. It's next year. That screamed we're already doing PR and when we bring him back.
I think the only way they would not bring him back is if they can convince like Ron Rivera to come to Cleveland.
That would be a good hire. Like, yeah. Even if he's not like whatever, like analytically like minded. That team just needs someone who can discipline them and like control them and
a well-coached
run a tight
Browns
ship.
Team,
yes.
A well-coached Browns team is in the playoffs.
And who will let an offensive-minded coach call the offensive plays.
Exactly.
Just the last 3 weeks, let's just give Todd Monken the playbook and let's just see what happens. Like this isn't working. Let's try something else with the offensive coordinator.
You know why he won't do that? Because if he did and the offense took off, the owners would be like, well, what do we even need this guy for? Bye, Freddie. You're out, man.
Yeah.
And take your t-shirts with you.
Falcons 40, Panthers 20. Falcons covered the 3.5-point spread. The overhit at 48. Matt Ryan lit it up. Not an ideal first performance by the Perry Fuel-led Carolina Panthers. The Falcons swept the series. 5 straight wins against the Panthers. Yikes. 3 straight by 14 or more. Season high in points. Julio Jones topped 1,000 yards, 6 straight season for him. Devontae Freeman was pretty good. His first rushing touchdown since 2017. Matt Ryan, 20 of 34 for 313 yards and 2 touchdowns. He threw one of those touchdowns passes to someone named Olamide Zaccheaus.
UVA, baby, undrafted free agent.
There you go, 93-yard touchdown, the longest passing touchdown in the NFL this year. The 10th player in NFL history with 50,000 passing yards, Matt Ryan is. Very exciting stuff. The Panthers have a negative 65-point differential in their 5-game losing streak. Suffice to say, I don't think that Perry Fuel is going to get the job.
Yeah, what the most damning part of this game was what Panthers cornerback Dante Jackson said after the game when he took shots at the play calling. So they asked him on the coverage calls on the Falcons' two touchdown passes. He said, quote, first of all, it was two bad calls, two horrible calls, two calls that we didn't call in those situations all week at practice. They asked him about the 93-yard touchdown pass he allowed. He said, backed up, 3rd and 7, called an engage 8 blitz. We sent everybody to leave the corners out there on an island by themselves. Zero coverage, no help, backed up with a quarterback like that. I don't care if you're Champ Bailey or any of those quarterbacks on the NFL top 100 list. That is a play that's hard to make for any guy, especially with a quarterback like Matt Ryan. So you, that's kind of not what you want to hear when you are gunning potentially for to make yourself the permanent coach. Safe to say, not happening. That's like the Joe Philbin throwing the challenges like in the first minute of the first game. Like, you have that happen, you're done. It's over.
Speaking of challenges, Perry Fuel, 2 for 2 in his career as a head coach challenging plays. Those challenges came more than a decade apart. That's incredible. He has challenged 2 plays. The last one was in 2009. Like, that's insane to think about. There's not a whole lot to talk about with this game. Kyle Allen, people are ready to call the Kyle Allen experiment over. That's fine. I don't care. Do you want to argue about it?
No. Let Will Greer play. All right, next game. Let's go.
Dan Quinn done?
He keeps winning.
He keeps winning. I mean,
they got 4 wins.
Only 4 fewer than we thought they should have at this point.
Yeah.
They do have 4 wins, Ryan. That is correct.
Listen, everyone can't be the Steelers, okay?
So you, Dan Quinn, all right. Bucks 38, Colts 35. Ouch, Colts. This is a bad game. You could not lose. Bucks push -3. It was one of my best bets. Wah, wah. Over 46.5. I should have taken that. Wah, wah. Jameis Winston, 42 fantasy points. Woo.
And three interceptions. Imagine if he didn't throw picks every time he turned around.
I mean, this was everything about Jameis Winston encapsulated in this game. He had like a pick six.
Did you see his incompletion? He threw the best incompletion in the history of incompletions. He threw a ball that if he had been in Cowboy Stadium, it had hit the scoreboard. He threw it straight up.
I did not see it.
And it the wind must have caught it because it landed out of bounds. But, I mean, it looked like the world's highest punt. It was insane. I haven't tried to find it, but I watched it live. I was like, this is like some circus type stuff.
Bruce Arians said, the resiliency of this team is growing on me. 3 in a row, Indianapolis is a good team, missing some guys, but we made a couple receivers look like Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison. It wasn't our best, but we won. That's nice. Sean, do you want us to play the are you asking for us to play the Office clip?
I feel like we should, as we talk about.
Yeah, I mean, so there's – I don't remember this clip from The Office, but Will Ferrell is in it, and Jeff Eisenband, who is at MSG Networks, he tweeted this. He was like, this is Jameis Winston's agent meeting with NFL teams this offseason. It's old Andy Bernard and Will Ferrell.
D'Angelo Vickers.
Who?
D'Angelo Vickers. That was Will Ferrell's name.
Ah, good for you. D'Angelo Vickers and Andy Bernard on a sales pitch meeting. And this is Jameis Winston's agent meeting with NFL teams this offseason.
You could be making the biggest mistake of your life or the biggest good decision of your life. It's either going to be the best thing you ever did or the worst thing you ever did. If you want some boring white bread clock watcher who's going to get you your paper when you ordered it for the agreed upon price, Andy's not your guy. You ever play Russian roulette? Time to spin the chamber bars. By signing up for another year.
Sean, that's you.
I mean, they are definitely running this back for another year. And somebody's going to talk themselves into picking the Bucks to win the division. It's going to be awesome.
Something notable from this game we should touch on is that Mike Evans caught a touchdown bomb. It was only 61 yards. Appeared to tear or do something really bad to his hamstring in the process of that. And it sounds like he's at least going to be out until week 17, Bruce Arians made it sound like, but I just wouldn't be surprised if they just shut him down completely.
They should shut him down.
And like that only matters obviously for fantasy reasons, but
they should shut him down. Absolutely. Breach, what happened to the Colts? They collapsed and they're now 6-7 and somehow behind the Raiders and the Browns in the playoff race. They were leading the division and Frank Reich was the coach of the year. Is it just all the injuries?
Yes, it is all the injuries. If you would have told, this is what the Colts, I think we all thought they were going to be back in August when Andrew Luck retired. We're like, this team's probably going to go 8-8. And they're going to be okay, but they're not going to win this division. And then they got hot at the beginning of the season, and then everybody kind of jumped on the bandwagon and thought maybe they could win the division. But this is – it just eventually becomes too much. Who's Jacoby Brissett throwing to out there? You don't have – he hasn't had T.Y. Hilton for a few weeks. He just got Marlon Mack back. So they're just moving off – they're missing offensive weapons all over the place. But it is crazy because if you would have told me that Jameis Winston was going to throw three interceptions, including a pick six – I would have thought for sure the Colts win this game by three touchdowns. And the most surprising thing is that their biggest issue was their defense. They had a 35-21 lead midway through the third quarter. They're up two touchdowns. There's no reason they should have blown that lead. And then their four possessions after getting that lead were punt, lost fumble, missed field goal, was not Adam Vinatieri. It was Chase McLaughlin. And a turnover on down. So they just kind of fell all over themselves. I don't know what else to say. They fell all over themselves.
There you go.
Mm.
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 No, look, do the Colts have a prayer of winning the division?
Just stop it.
I mean, how many prayers are we talking about? I know it's
4 to 6
prayers.
Billion.
Well, if the Titans and Texans split.
And the Colts are allowed to play 20 more games against the Jets and win them all.
They only have the Saints. They have to go into New Orleans and win. They have to win out.
Listen, you're filibustering for some reason. Please go to the next game. The Colts aren't going to win.
The Colts aren't winning out. That's the problem. Is every scenario involves them winning out, and they're not winning out.
All right, you guys buried the Colts pretty quick.
We buried them last week.
Right, Jets 22, Dolphins 21. Screw this game. And screw the kickers, and screw the coaches, and screw all the people involved in this game. Screw you all. How are there not 40, how are there not 50 points in this game? How the hell was that possible? I lost my balls on this game because they kicked 10 field goals.
You hate to see it.
10 field goals.
This was a fantasy game for me. I fantasize about games with 10 field goals, Brinson.
I was losing my mind. They scored 45 points, and I think there was one touchdown in this game. I was about to freak out. I had the over at 45 and 46, big, and all they had to do was find a way to make one more touchdown.
By the way, the Dolphins should have won this game, and Brian Flores, like Zach Taylor, got screwed on a DPI call late in the game to set up the game-winning field goal for Sam Fickleberger, and that's how the Jets won it, Sam Ficken. That was a joke.
He was pissed, too. He ran up to the ref immediately after. He was like, what? That was horse bleep. He didn't yell bleep, obviously, but the two teams.
That was a weird
thing
he did.
These two teams, the Jets and the Dolphins, who, by the way, both should be shot into the sun, combined to go 1 of 9 in the red zone.
Just so we're clear, do you think the Jets still have a chance to make the playoffs?
He never said that, Ryan. He said push. He said push.
Well, they pushed right to next season.
By the way, Devontae Parker left this game early with a concussion. Only at 28 yards, Sammy Watkins at 50 yards, so the gap is now less than 300 yards heading into the final.
300? How ashamed.
882 to 588.
Sammy.
Also, you know what? F you.
No.
The Jets are 4-1 in their last five games. This is exactly what I said would happen. They would make a push.
Are they going to the playoffs?
No, I said a playoff push. I didn't say they'd make the playoffs.
Who are they pushing exactly?
Yeah.
They're about to push the Steelers out of the playoffs.
Whoa! There we go. We got him to recommit. He doubled down.
Yeah, there he is. Never mind.
I already bet on the Ravens minus 14 on Thursday.
I think we at least need to give a shout out to Jason Sanders, the Dolphins kicker. He made 7 field goals. That's the second most in a game in NFL history. And the crazy thing is he actually missed a field goal in this game. That's how many times the Dolphins drove up and down the Jets' throats and not getting into the end zone, as Brinson mentioned, 0 for 6 in the red zone because they attempted a field goal pretty much every single time. But he missed an attempt from 34 yards. If he would have hit that, he would have tied the NFL record four most field goals in a game that is held by Rob Baronis. And on a personal note, for me, this game was like walking into a bar and you see Megan Fox and she starts hitting on you. It was just a welcome surprise.
That's... Oh, TBT, Megan Fox. I have a fun fact about Jason Sanders via Fantasy Football Today. He had 24 fantasy points. He outscored Alvin Kamara, Tevin Coleman, Odell Beckham, Curtis Samuel, and Jack Doyle combined. So if you had him in the fantasy playoffs, you probably won your matchup with your kicker.
Almost 100%. That's why you should not have kickers in fantasy.
Wrong.
Look, kickers are trash humans. Their sons are trash humans. Their family are trash humans. You shouldn't have them in your fantasy.
Why does he lash out at people when things go bad for him?
Brinson hates kickers. Somebody actually tweeted me a couple weeks ago about advice for their all-kicker league, and I'm still not even sure if they were just kidding or if someone out there is actually in an all-kicker fantasy league. So someone, if you were listening, please tweet at me again because I forgot to respond, and it's buried now. It's so far back in my mentions, I'll never find it. But someone out there may or may not be in an all-kicker fantasy league.
I legitimately may hate Adam Gase at this point. He is so bad at his job.
Thank you.
He runs like he ran Bilal Powell into the line 40 times today. Just over and over and over. It's like, and look, Sam Darnold didn't have a good day. He missed a bunch of throws. I think he hurt his hand at some point, and you could tell his accuracy was off. Like, he had two early touchdown passes. He looked like he was rolling. And then they just tried to run it with Bilal Powell. Like, just chunk it deep to Robbie Anderson repeatedly. The Dolphins cannot cover you. They should have blitzed the Dolphins, and it's just so annoying.
It's almost like we talk about all the time about how he stays up and doesn't sleep. It's like he's actually trying to devise the worst possible game plan. Like, he has the under, and, like, that's what he's trying to do. That is the only explanation for why he's staying up that late. Because no one stays up that late to call runs up the middle and then check downs behind the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 8, which is all the – all like, Adam gets.
You know what? Maybe Adam, at this point, it's a diminishing returns. Go get some sleep. Okay, pal? Get some sleep. Eat some melatonin and get some sleep.
Which is like funny because it relates to Ryan Tannehill because we're talking about how deep he's throwing the ball downfield. And that is, I think, directly tied to him being freed from Adam Gase's offense where now he can finally look downfield. And shouts to our boy, Arthur FedEx.
Why am I
putting
this?
Yes. Smith. Yeah.
Debo says we got to finish this last game in 6 minutes so we get out in under 2 hours.
Okay. Good God. If you were still listening, we love you.
I mean, who knows? Chargers 45, Jags 10. I don't even know. The Jaguars have lost, I think the number is their last 5 games. Their point differential is like -125 in their last 5 games. That's incredible. Chargers covered -3, obviously. 45-10. The over at 42.5 hit. Phillip Rivers, 30 fantasy points. Gardner Minshew didn't matter. The Chargers, of course, look good once they, once they get rolling. The Jaguars are the only team in a single season since 1986 to lose 5 straight games by 17 plus points. The 86 Bucks are the last team to drop 5 straight by at least 17. Austin Eckler, 8 carries, 101 yards, 4 catches, 112 yards, and a receiving touchdown. Career high, 213 yards from scrimmage. First career game with 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving, and just the second player in Chargers history with 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving a single game, joining guess who? What other Chargers running back do you think had 100 yards receiving and 100 yards rushing in a game?
But Danny and Tomlinson.
That's incorrect, Breach.
Chuck Muncy.
Trick question.
Lionel James, LT never did it. Got him. You got dunked on in the 2 hour mark. You got finished.
The Jags suck. They may need a quarterback. Phil Rivers, he should have retired after this game because this is the best game he's played in a long time. 154.4 passer rating.
Didn't so start him in fantasy, obviously. I started Fitzpatrick. Do the Jags fire everybody? I think they fire everybody.
What do you keep them around for? I mean, they have the same record as Dan Quinn and the Falcons, mind you. But at least Dan Quinn has Matt Ryan. What is whoever ends up being the coach have in Jacksonville?
Nothing. A bunch of bloated contracts, bad roster, and
Nick Foles.
And a dinosaur as your guy making your football decisions.
Matt Coughlin's out, too.
You think he's out? I was thinking you're going to fire everyone but Coughlin. Okay, good.
He gave the speech to the fans, like, don't give up on us. He's out. He knows he's out. By the way, big day for regression. Mike Williams and Robert Woods both had their first touchdown catches of the year. That's exciting. Okay, we have reached the end of this podcast, clearly. Make sure and the Jags eliminated from the playoffs. Make sure and download, subscribe, rate, and review. Thank you for listening to all 2 hours of the Recap Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back on Monday. Oh, we had a Monday night preview that's in the feed. Devo and I will be up recording it in like 3 hours. And make sure and check out our Monday night recap as well.
Are we doing one for that game? It's just Eagles-Giants.
Yes.
I'm just kidding. I'll be there.
How many times can I say to get us past 2 hours, Devo?
Too many.
Devo was literally scooting away from the desk to like to wrap it up, and then you drew him back in by asking him a question, and he had to like slide back across to get there.
He did the Collinsworth slide.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.